and welcome to episode 224 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the Nerf gun maniac, known as Mr. Tony Esmond. it's straight out of the gate, Tony, because...
Yeah, I kept telling him I was bringing a Nerf gun. And then right. Sarah Dunkerton shot a video of her firing the biggest Nerf gun I've ever seen in my life.
Just for context to our lovely listeners, yeah. Depending on when you heard this, this show is just after Nottingham Comic Con 2019. Yeah. We got some great audio and stuff in a minute, but we'll get to that. Yeah. Because the shocking news of the convention is that this prick was allowed a Nerf gun.
I fired it at Vince. To be fair, I only really fired it at you once or twice.
You only fired it at people when they were in a conversation. Who does that?
And you came up and goes, right, I almost lost my temper over that because I almost did a wee when it hit me.
Well, you don't expect to get shot in the neck, do you, when you're...
Well, the worst thing is, I fired it at you again, and you were chatting to Sarah Harris, and it got her in the throat.
Yeah.
And I'm like... Oh my God!
That, I tell you what, it was worth it just to see the look on Tony's face when I turned round, and it was like watching an 8-year-old boy just shrink into himself, like, oh God!
And then I was standing next to Sarah Dunkerton firing it at Charles Raymond, but because he was near the balcony, it kept going over the balcony. Yeah. So I don't know if it hit people on the head or something. And every time it did, I was trying to get her to hold the gun. I said, "Hold this, Sarah," and she says, "I'm not holding it." Not you did it.
Have we got a photo of Tony holding the Nerf gun?
That's no, it's only a awesome. Little one.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. You can still do a lot of damage, Tony.
Shoot people in the throat.
Emotionally, yeah. Mainly. I've kept the bullet.
I'm keeping this. You kept showing it to me, waving it at me, going, "I'm keeping this. You're not getting it back." And I'm like, I'd been on Amazon and bought a pack of 100.
So I was going to say, seeing from the tweets and stuff on Facebook and Twitter, obviously, Nottingham was great.
Really
yeah,
good,
man. It was my
favourite year so far. I'm going to say that. Yeah.
It was a really good day. Big shout out to Kevin Cowan and everyone who helped out on the day. Like I say, this is the day after the convention. Normally we give it a few days before doing
I'm
this.
I'm absolutely killed. It killed me. Literally.
Really?
Yeah. Knackered, yeah.
But travelling a full-on convention aside, it was a great day. And like I say, we got some audio. We managed to... only got a couple of audio interviews, mainly because whenever I went round to try and interview people, they weren't at their table. It was always in the 5 minutes when someone leaves their table that I went to talk to them. And then I got accused of being not on my table when I got back. So,
To be fair, you're on your table for ages and you went to me, right, I've had enough, I'm going for a wander. You just bit off for a bit. But
Yeah.
But we were busy. We were running panels and sitting on panels and all sorts, weren't we?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, we got a bit of panel audio for you. A couple of interviews with some new voices. And certainly there's some creators that were at Nottingham that we got a chance to meet and chat to. And I know they're also going to be at Thought Bubble and we're definitely going to be talking to them and getting interviews with them there.
So, and you bought me a comic about muffins having sex with each other.
I did indeed. You know when you see something, you think, I know, like this.
Yeah, that was an obvious one. You sent me one of the pictures of over and I was like, Jesus. What did I quote? I quoted it and said, every day we stray further from the light of God.
Damnation is coming via muffins. I'll tell you that now. There is a picture of it having sex with a cucumber at one point as well.
Do you know what else will save your soul, though?
Comic House,
reading comics. Comic House, they're our sponsor, and we love them. They're an indie comic marketplace with a difference. I mean, it's not just the UK; it's worldwide. You can get comics from there on ComicHouse.com. There's a huge selection of titles. A load of self-published creators are putting their books up there to sell. You can start selling straight away. But we've been banging on about the app for ages, and it's great. It's always being updated, and I know a lot of our listeners have checked it out. And you know, and a lot of creators that were listening have checked out. We had a lot of good feedback
this
week. Yeah, brilliant.
About Comic House, so that was cool. I mean, we didn't ask for it. They just came out of the blue. But every creator loves using it and putting their comics on there. And for instance...
That's what we run it, don't we?
We run this joint. No. I'm
too tired. Don't know how to work it. I wouldn't have a clue how to work it, yeah.
But what's on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got Odyssey Initiation Volume 1, Issue 1, Society of Smiles, The Indifference Engine Volume 1, Jamshide 3, Miskatonic Volume 1, Issue 1, Impossible 1, The Young Sherlock Holmes Adventures, Surrealsville 16, Super Fun Adventures of Jax, and The Lady and the Lost World.
Oh, I reviewed that, The Lady in the Lost World, about a year ago.
Oh, nice one. It's Marcosia.
Yeah, that's one.
The list is just so different and varied every time. And like whenever Dan reads out the list, I'm always like, there's always like one or two. I'm like, right, okay, that sounds great. I need to.
Yeah. That jam show, I think we're up to issue 3 now, and I've not actually read any of them.
Yeah.
So I've got to get that one. I'll have a look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's well worth it. So if you go to comichaos.com, you can find out more. There's a 14-day free trial. It's only £3 a month subscription service. And yeah, it benefits you as a creator to put your books on there. Like you say, especially if, you know, you could be like, oh, I've got books from 5 years ago that are just sitting on my hard drive.
Yeah, this book is 6 months old. It's not selling now. What are you going to do with it? Just stick it on there.
Yeah, put it on there.
As well, might
you? Get more eyes on it.
Yeah, as soon as people read it, that will equal pennies to you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It might encourage people to buy a physical copy as well, which is always worth remembering, I think.
Exactly.
Or invest in your other catalogue of books, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So, it's a big thing. We talk about it in a bit, don't we, V, about getting your eyes in other communities, getting people to see stuff who wouldn't normally. And that panel you ran, we talk a bit about that. And it's a really useful thing to think about, because we're in a bubble, aren't we? You need to reach outside that bubble sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I ran two panels. Bloody hell.
Yeah. Nice. Very competently. Very successfully.
While I was doing the kind of the Project Hoax stuff, I took a bit of a break with Vanguard, like promoting it and stuff. And when I've come back to updating, it really shows. Site hits are down. So it's like, it's one of those things you kind of constantly got to be bloody shouting it out there. So
I'll
be listening to that one, V.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely about sort of keeping your profile up, isn't it? It's not just, you know, you can't just sit in a bubble and work. You still need to be available and online, and you know, people still need to see things, especially if you're trying to cultivate a following. But
I mean, it depends. If you're just kind of like a gun for hire, like doing artwork or something for a company that's doing all that for you, but if you're like a creator creating for yourself, selling yourself, it's one of the things you got to invest time in.
Yeah
It's free a lot of the time. A lot of this is stuff it's free to do.
So with that in mind, here comes the audio from Nottingham Comic Con. Couple from the shop floor, couple from the panels. Panels came out really nicely, actually. I was very pleased. Thank you to everyone that was on the panels, or anyone who came over to talk to us on the day. It was great.
That is with the caveat that to say it quickly, I did a panel on comic covers with Martin Simmons and Lorenzo Eddington, and it was just a storming success. Like, everyone was involved and really good, but the problem with it was it was a visual one, and everyone had to sort of sit back and look at a computer's PowerPoint screen on the, you know, the big screen there.
Yeah.
And because of that, we were trying to record the whole room, and it's a bit echoey. So if you want to listen to it, or if you've got a way of removing the echo, obviously, then let me know. But I've got a Dropbox link for it. So rather than put it on the show, because the quality is not up to our usual standard sort of thing, if you fancy sort of listening to it, and so occasional bits of it are a bit of a struggle, then just send me a message or something. I'll put it on the Facebook page as well, and I'll send you the download of it.
So there you go. So here's the audio from Nottingham Comic Con 2019 for you to enjoy. Right, so this is the beginning of the day of Nottingham Comic Con. I've currently just arrived in Nottingham and parked up. So I'm sat in a car park. What sort of lunatic will record an intro sat in his car? I do not know. But I thought I might not get a chance while I'm on the convention floor. So, upcoming. Hopefully there'll be a bunch of interviews with some creators. I'm hosting a couple of panels, so I'm going to try and record those. So though both of those panels might be in this bit of audio as well. No doubt you'll hear a bit of Tony and some old friends and hopefully new friends and stuff. So so for the next, I don't know, it could be an hour, it could be 5 minutes, knowing what I'm like at recording audio. But enjoy the next batch of Nottingham Comic Con, and I'll record an outro probably sat in my car at the end when I sound really miserable and depressed. No, it won't really. It's going to be a good day. So, check this lot out. Right, I'm here for the first interview of the day with Alex Hahn. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
We've already had a long chat earlier today, and there was some absolute gold that you'll never hear.
Yeah, that's always the way.
But, yeah, I was just commenting on your table. Now, we talk a lot on our show about how to lay out, like, your books and your work and stuff, and I think you've got a very... It's set out really nicely in terms of, like the signage and everything, and you've got things for prints. Has this been an ongoing process for you?
Very much so. Yeah. Con after con, I always have like the first hour of like faffing around and rejigging things. And yeah. For a lot of years, I used to have a lot of like plastic book stands. And when
I'm still on the plastic book stands.
Yeah, I think when you're trying to juggle like 10 of them, it gets really annoying. And like you then having like stuff behind other stuff and covering things up. And especially then when I share a table with Don McKenzie, because he's got 5 or 6 books as well. And then we're still, you know, so, yeah, now I've got my card rack out of retirement.
Because your books are also, like, they're like A6s, A5s,
a
variety of different
things. Whole range of sizes. A7's the smallest.
A7?
Yeah, that's this little zine.
Oh, wow, that's A7.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, and it's Pokemon flavoured.
Yeah.
Nice. But, obviously... some of our listeners might know you from your Block series.
Yeah, Block.
Which has been going... How many years have you been making Block comics now?
Well, I've been drawing Block ever since uni, so it's coming up on 10 years. And right, I've been just sticking the character in anywhere. So if it's an editorial commission, there's very likely going to be a Block hidden in there somewhere.
But for those who don't know, what is Block?
Yeah, that would be a good place to start. So Block is... Blob is a Martian. He's got 2 eyes on long stalks, so, you know, kind of a stereotypical alien kind of look. He's a little green man, but my twist on him is he's the only green Martian. And he's meant to be like a Martian scout or explorer, and he's always just getting into trouble, getting things wrong.
Yeah.
You know, the wrong
end of the stick. And the books are like different adventures going on.
Yeah, so... And the first ones I did had a bit more of an underground comic sort of adult flavour to them.
Yeah.
One of the first sequential ones I did was Blob versus the Cyclops.
Nice.
And this is... the whole book is about Blob beating up the 2012 Olympic Games mascot. Do you remember those?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And so it's essentially a design critique.
Yeah.
And there's a... The twist at the end, I think, is one of the things I'm most proud of. It's just my
is
idea.
Is it your M. Night Shyamalan? Is that
almost?
What it
is how I think they came up with the logo.
Oh, no spoilers, folks. But yeah, very good. But yeah, you do a lot of different things with Block. I know, and there's certainly spin-off books now. There, or there's an interesting one that I think we need to talk about. You know where this is going.
Oh yeah,
because you've got the universe of Block and lots of different adventures there. But then what is your book, D&D?
Okay, so it's not quite a spin-off of Blob, but it's Blob's also become like my mascot and name.
Yeah.
So I publish under the name Blobshot.
nice.
And then the series is Blobshot Minis. So they're standalone comics, which you can read. But
so you haven't got like a Marvel Universe?
Not yet, but we never know. It'd be a bit weird if the two meet. And so I've got, at the moment, 4 books in this series. 2 have Blop in them and 2 with other different characters. Yeah. So
is it more just trying different things, without being beholden to sticking to a structure?
Yeah, it's an anthology series.
Yeah.
And so in place of like working on a longer anthology book, it's, you know, having separate volumes, but it's linked by the common like design format.
Yeah.
And
so what is the common design format of them?
So they're all A6.
Yeah,
and the covers that are all mostly typographical, limited
colour
palettes, and very much inspired by old book type book design, and things. And then inside it's pretty much free for all, but they're always like quite short stories, so sort of 16-20 pages.
And what is D&D?
So D&D,
which you're holding in your hands now.
You haven't read it yet.
No, so. I haven't. I'm going to be picking up a copy in a minute.
Yeah. So this came about at an MCM Comic Con. I wrote the book very quickly whilst I was sitting behind my table looking out at a sea of D&D fans,
right,
completely obscuring my view. having a very interesting conversation amongst themselves about something that I have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
Because I've ended up next to people who are really big in the D&D community, and they were oblivious to this. So the whole time I was sitting there seething, and it's like going, just get out of the way, you penises.
And then what happened?
So I channeled my rage into a short comic story of the fantasy genre, Lord of the Rings style, kind of on a magical journey.
There seems to be a little bit of a map. There's a map.
Yeah, it starts, the M papers have a map of the world that they're in, but we only, the story only takes place in a small section of it, so there's scope for the future. And the two main characters are called Big D and Little D.
Yeah.
And they're penises.
And there it is, folks. I think you can agree that the build-up for that, it was so worth it.
I mean, I'm looking at the pages now, and they're dicks.
Yeah, they're penises. The penises off to find their fortunes.
Yeah.
And
as a penis does, I guess.
Yeah.
and you wrote this, did you say... during MCM?
Yes. Pretty much all of the key plot points and several key pieces of dialogue. Just in a little black notebook with little drawings of a...
It was rage writing in some ways.
A little bit,
but then it became something more. Because
constructive.
All jokes aside, it looks like quite a sweet-natured and fun little book.
Yeah, it's, two friends on a journey, helping each other out, deciding where to go. And
Frodo and Sam, if...
Yeah, pretty much.
If they were
penises, yeah.
I'm guessing there's not like a 3-hour long ending.
Not yet.
Not yet.
But
if there may be an extended.
Well, we've got the hardcover to come first.
Oh, I knew this was going to be worth it. I mean, all jokes aside, it's not just. This isn't just a photocopied out book that like people just churned out. You've genuinely thought this is a genuine book.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's a fun little full colour little book, and it's just one of that series. So what else apart from D&D, which you can see why I had to talk about this book, folks. But what are the other books in this sort of the mini sort of strips?
So the mini ones. The first one is a spin-off from a series I did called The Croffin and Muffnut, which is basically anthropomorphic muffins and various foodstuffs. And they always seem to be on like a kind of a romance kind of theme. So this one, it was inspired by a friend who wanted a present for her boyfriend for Christmas.
Right.
So she gave me a really loose starting point for a story.
Yeah.
And it basically turned into this tale of pancake and death buns. So she's basically a burger bun. And they're speed dating, having a bit of a bad time of it. So... and they're all, they're dating foods that they're meant to complement with. So pancake, he's dating ice cream, but she's a bit flaky.
Oh my god!
And the bacon's a bit rash.
I'm buying this, by the way, people.
And then buns on her date because they meet at the bar, and she's like telling her a similar story of woe. She meets meathead burger.
Oh my life.
And a veggie burger.
Oh, veggie burger. He seems to have a cold.
Yeah.
Oh.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So, I mean, I love that, someone just gave you the short idea for what you would think is, a silly little story, but it actually genuinely looks well thought out. There's story structure, there's everything going on here.
Yeah, I put some work into this.
Yeah, yeah.
It was mostly trying to work, a conclusion to it.
Yeah.
And basically, the two of them, they strike up this romance, but they're not really meant to be together because in the world of food and hierarchies, you're meant to be with, the ones that compliment you rather than, a pancake and a burger bun. That's weird.
Yeah.
So we've got this alternate, going too many carbs in that relationship.
Oh, my God. There is a turnip.
Yeah. And then what turns out is that basically Buns gets bad gas when the two of them are together. This was the loose starting point, by the way, was the gas part.
Oh, right, okay, so it was just about food with gas.
It was essentially about,
And it's become your opus. Yeah.
And so then the story is about them learning to live with it and trying to overcome that obstacle.
There's lots of great tips and lessons for life in general from your books, whether it be food porn or adventures with. I knew
it tells you how to get out of the dragon's cave and do. there's a dragon.
Yeah.
And there is the dragon's penis. Oh.
I can hear all our listeners clicking on your online shop as we speak. But as well as all this, you just had a Kickstarter, didn't you? Which you just completed. What tell us a bit about that.
So the Kickstarter was to do for my first big Blop storybook. Because I've always used Blop in smaller things, for I wanted to get a decent sized graphic novel out there. Yeah. So it's 44 pages of Blop adventures. It's all ages, which I should stress, because like none of my other books I've talked about are really.
Yeah. So this one is. That's good then.
Yeah, Blop is always going to be family friendly.
Good.
From now on.
Yeah.
So there's 8 different stories in there. So some are very short, so like 2 pages. And then there's a 19 page, which is like the main story, which is actually a reworking of the very first Blop tale that I wrote while I was at uni. And so it's all about Blop coming to Earth. He's meant to investigate undercover, so he's meant to infiltrate a family and report back on them. But then it turns out that all the idiomatic phrases and things that we use really confuse him, and he thinks it's a code and they're onto him.
Nice. Oh. So, I mean, it's a lovely looking book, dude. So, I mean, I think people will recognise Blop when they see it. Where can people find you online or your shop? You know, where can people get hold of these marvellous and different books that you have?
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram as Blopagram with underscores between the Blop, the A, and the Gram.
Nice.
Which is a bit annoying because underscores are a bugger to type on phone keyboards. But I'm in too deep now.
Yeah.
It's printed on a load of stuff.
Yeah, you made your bed, so.
Yeah. My Twitter is a bit more accessible. It's Blopshop with an underscore between the Blop and the shop.
Yeah.
Because someone already had the one without a gap. No. And they weren't even selling comics anything, really.
Yeah. I think you should copyright D&D. I don't think anyone's done that.
No, I think I'm onto something there. Yeah, it's got a good ring to it.
Yeah.
You know, I think hashtag D&D.
I think that sounds good.
Maybe even just put an N in the middle of it.
Yeah.
You know.
I think
there could be a board game in there.
Yeah, there could be.
Yeah. Maybe something with dice.
Oh, thank you very much, Steve.
No problem. It's been great to speak to you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the DIY comics panel. I'm guessing a lot of you out there want to make comics, so welcome. I'm Vince. I'm going to be moderating this panel. Shame on them for asking me. But, I'm joined by some fantastic creators here today. We're all tabling here today. First off, creator of Dungeon Fun, Neil Slorence.
Hiya.
The co-creator and artist of Mole, Sarah Dunkerton. And the creator of The Sheep and the Wolves, Nick Prolix. They're all fantastic. No doubt you'll go out and buy all this stuff, which you should. Because it's all on my shopping list as well. Anyway, so all of you have been making comics for quite a few years. And certainly the world of DIY and make-it-yourself comics has changed quite a bit in the past few years. And you've all had your own different experiences with it. So I think, just to start us off with that in mind, what is your current view on the landscape of what people call DIY comics, as it were? Should we start? Neil?
I think DIY comics is just, it's come such a way to where it now kind of matches like proper published comics. Mm. If you look at Nixon and Sarah's comics, it's just like the quality is just so up there. It's like it's full colour, it's nice paper, it's like glossy, and like the quality of the art and stuff. Like, I think maybe if you think in like stereotypical terms, you think of DIY comics as like photocopied, floppy, really kind of grungy, looks like it's been Xerox and stuff. Well, I think now there's like a kind of almost like a grey area between proper published stuff and DIY stuff, because the quality has gotten so good and like the access to proper printing and stuff has gotten so much easier as well.
Yeah, you walk around a convention like today and everything just looks straight off the shelf of a local comic book shop.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, what about you guys?
Yeah, no, I think what Neil said, because technology's kind of expanded so much that it's, you got better kind of like quality sort of print resources and stuff available to you. That's if you want to print, you don't have to print, you can put it online digitally and stuff. There's a massive market for digital comics, as you well know.
Yeah.
But also the kind of like homemade sort of rough zine, there's a massive market for that as well. Mm. You dabbled into that recently, haven't you, with your Panonica?
Yeah, just smashing something out in a photocopier and then stapling, you know, folding, sitting there, you know.
Because you do that as well as like the like full on.
Yeah, so yeah, it's that wanting to having the freedom to do something different, and also, you know, you don't have that lead in time of like, you know, 18 months or whatever with a publisher. You know, you can wake up one morning, literally decide I want to make something that's going to look like this today. Yeah. And by bedtime you've got a stack of comics to sell.
That isn't necessarily a deadline, everyone.
Yeah.
No. It's not a deadline.
But you've tried all sort of different aspects of it. Which one do you prefer?
I think that it's so, the barriers to entry in terms of like technical know-how to get your stuff printed are so low now, and so kind of the access to, you say, all kinds of print quality and, you know, website, you know, a printer's website, you know, so easy to use, you know, that you can, half the fun is kind of shopping around and kind of playing around, almost kind of putting together, you know, an ideal book, you know, imagine, you know, what would this be like if you had French flaps, you know, what would this be, you know, and all of those options are available to you.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to put out a hardcover book, you know, with a cloth spine, you know, and gold embossed, lettering on the front, you can
do that. It'll cost you a bit of money. Yeah, but the options there.
The options are there, and you know, the kind of the myriad options, I think, is one of the things that makes.
So, I mean, it sounds too easy to sort of say it's easier than ever to make comics, because it's still hard work, isn't it? It's still a lot of work, isn't it?
Yeah, you do need. I mean, if it's just about telling stories, if you've got a story to tell, you've got a passion behind it to kind of like actually, you know, get it through and see it through, then you totally do it. You don't let kind of like anything, any sort of like worry on your skill level or how you're going to put it out there. Just make it, and you'll find an avenue for it. Whether you post it online as like a web comic and you kind of like put one page up every like couple of weeks or whatever, or you kind of like compile it together into a PDF to sell digitally via Comic House.
Yeah, Comic House. Don't get me doing a sponsorship.
Or whether you know, print it at home on your inkjet printer or photocopy or whatever, or if you take it to a printer to kind of like produce, you know, multiple copies to sell at a convention and kind of like reach that sort of bar. You don't need.
Yeah, there's lots you can do with it.
I think it's like one of the coolest things about comics is it's so easy to get into. Like, I know we were talking about printers and PDFs and stuff, and I don't want anyone to feel bogged down, but I think one of the coolest things about comics and why I got into comics was because it was just so easy to be like, I can draw something and then just fold it, or I can like draw stuff and then if I want to be fancy I can photocopy it. And that's like, kind of how I got into comics, is I saw like really DIY stuff and it sounds dumb, but I was like, I could do that. But I think people see my stuff as well, and now people say that to me, like, "Oh, I saw your stuff," and I was like, "I could do that." So you know.
But that's a brilliant thing. If anyone looks at your work and says, "Oh, I've tried making comics because of your work," that goes beyond what you're able to do, because you just want to tell stories.
At the end of the day.
So, how daunting was it for you? When you first started out, Neil, like to do your first book, how did you feel? Because we've all had that before the first book we've ever done, whether it be a photocopy one or whether it be printed or whatever.
It's daunting. I think your first book is always a bit daunting, but I would say, like, honestly, if you're thinking about making comics or making a book, this is probably terrible advice, don't be precious about it. Like, I like my first book was just a little kind of, I think it was A6, just black and white photocopied little zine about all the things you'd do if you were a wee ghost. And like, but that was it.
Have you still got copies of that?
I don't have any with me. But I think if for your first book, you should like start easy. You should be like, right, little black and white, see how it goes. And then you kind of learn the process of like, how does stuff get printed? Or how many do I make? And how do I set up the book for print and all that stuff? You learn all that along the way. I do meet a lot of people that are like, oh, I'm making a graphic novel and it's the first thing. And I'm learning about flats and colours and bindings and stuff. Yeah. And it's like, my advice, and it's not gospel, is don't go in that high, like, lowball it to start with. Make little things first and then see if you enjoy that process. And you learn along the way, and that feeds into your other stuff. Like,
because the next project should always be the best project. So, like, you're very proud of the one you've done, but like, oh, and then you learn things from it, and then the next one will be better, and then the next one will be better. And you're always learning with comics, aren't you, about how to...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, I can imagine... I mean, what about you guys? Is your first comic kind of low ball or...?
I guess my first one was, I guess, Mulk, but I learned through the process and stuff because it was, like, the long-form one. But I did a lot of kind of, like, sort of character design and drawing and stuff. So I had the characters done, but I think I developed my art style while I was kind of, like, working on it. And that's been... like 6 years in the making. We've done just done our fifth and final issue, and I can see where I've come from the start to the finish,
which is interesting because I think Mulp is a hugely consistent book. which consistency is a thing in comics as well, because we're always developing as creators, aren't we, and artists. Yeah. So when you start off with something and you want it to be consistent, do you sometimes feel that you have to step back a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I can see where I've kind of like tweaked the processes slightly behind the scenes to kind of make things easier for myself, and where I've kind of like developed sort of aesthetically. Because in the first issue, although the setting kind of like allowed me to kind of, you know, get away with a lot. It's set in a desert. So I didn't have to do much in the way of backgrounds.
Oh, God bless that. Yeah.
Backgrounds are the thing. But as you can see later on, like, you know, things get a lot more kind of detailed and a lot more sort of intricate. But yeah, as Neil was saying, don't start with your magnum opus. Like, if you've got a big kind of graphic novel story going on, kind of do a few kind of like little spin-offs to play with the world and get used to telling stories in that format.
Start
before
with
going
garbage.
Into it.
You've
always
there's
got
a
one
t-shirt.
Yeah.
I'm not like dissing anyone, but I've met so many people that have been like, oh, I'm making a graphic novel, da da da. And because they've set themselves such a high mountain to climb, it doesn't get off the ground, it doesn't get started. Mm. No. Start with garbage, just make.
Just make.
Just make stuff. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I was thinking back to like my first comic was exactly when it was. It was like I was 11 and I just started secondary school. It was before. And I got like the measles or something where you had a week off school. And I found an Iron Man comic and Iron Man's fighting. It was either Whiplash or Blacklash. I can never remember what his name was at the time. And I basically copied it panel for panel. Like, you know, basically took a character, changed his hair, and I did it on graph paper because it was the only paper we had in the house, and just drew it, you know, straight in pen on felt tips, coloured it all in, and sellotaped all the pages together because I couldn't work out how you bind it, you know, and then took it to school and showed my mates, and that's basically what DIY comics is now. It's just instead of going to school, you stick it on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I mean? And you've got the internet.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, you just find something you like and copy it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, your version is going to be that little bit different. I just think let's take as many decisions out of the thing that you've got to make as possible. Just,
you know, I will say there's a lot to be said for like copying stuff. I can't remember the quote. It's like, it's okay to steal stuff, just steal it well or something.
Yeah.
And it's not advice you hear a lot, it's just the copy stuff or whatever. But it's, I think it's important as well, especially if you're trying to like find your own style, it's like try and draw from different stuff you like. So say you like Adventure Time or The Simpsons or anime stuff, like try and copy that stuff. Obviously don't sell it because it's other people's stuff. But like, you know, try and like copy stuff and see what you like and see what,
because there's a rhythm to the storytelling that you're sort of learning through doing, isn't it? Without realising it.
And I think eventually then when you, the more you do draw, the more you settle on your own style. I'm on a tangent,
so. I'm always on a tangent, but I mean, I think there's a lot of artists, there's probably a lot of people out here who have favourite artists, and if you saw their very first work, you'd be surprised at how they are. They look like a photocopier of a Jim Lee, or they look like a photocopier of another artist, but it's so removed from what their style is now, because all the, everything that they learned in those early days, and then they became their own thing. And it's the same with making comics. I mean, we've talked about like getting it printed, and certainly technology's moved on, and you know, Cintiqs and all of the iPads, you can do it on iPads now, but at the end of the day you don't need any of that, do you? You just need some paper and a pen.
Yep.
Or a pencil.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry if you don't have an iPad or a Cintiq or something. Yeah. Like, it shouldn't be your...
There's no proper way of doing it. That's what they kind of... All these kind of, like, how-to sort of books and stuff, they're guidelines, you know. Mm. They'll give you an insight on a bit of storytelling. They'll tell you how the pros kind of, like... pencil, ink and colour and all this sort of stuff. But they're guidelines. They're open to interpretation. There's no, like... strict rule of how to do it. You literally, you find what works for you, and you tell the stories that you want to tell, and then you put it out there in any way, shape or form that you want to.
And certainly if you're at a convention like this, I mean, anyone out there, like everyone at the table is doing this, so ask them questions. If you want to make a comic, don't be afraid, because just fountains of information behind every table.
Yeah, like we're not like gatekeepers or anything. No. We're not like, we can't tell you the secret pen secrets or something.
There's that weird fetishization of like you say, like the sort of how to.
Yeah.
Because I remember like when I was a kid, there just wasn't anything. Like, didn't have the internet when I was a lad. You know, my mate had How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way.
Yeah.
And that was it. And you know, so we just kind of looked at that. And it's like, when you get a new phone, when you get a new piece of kit at home, I guarantee there's not one person in here who's looked at a manual in the last 10 years, like, of a thing, like, whatever. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, just... You pick it up, you start smashing the buttons, and you hope that something, this is how I work, this is how I learn to drive. And you work out, after about a week or so, how, you know, your way of doing it.
Mm.
You know, and it's like with comics, like, you know, if the first thing you do is pick up a biro and you make comics with your biro, well, that's going to, you know, that's going to be how your style develops.
Mm.
And like I say, your technique is different than mine, yours, you know, there's no two... artists. Yeah.
There's always tips, but there's no right way.
No, exactly.
There's no.
I think that was something that was really kind of impressive for me. When I went to university, I did like an illustration degree. They were like, "Oh, you need to make contact. You need to have social media presence. You need a website. Blah 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 blah." But now I'm 10 years out of it. No one's like genesis story is the same. There's no strict. You know, you do this and then you get that, and then you do this and you get that.
You
make it your own way, and which is also daunting but quite freeing, because do what you want.
It's cool. Yeah, you meet a lot of people. I mean, there's that whole kind of education argument of like, do you go to art school or uni for it? Like, I mean, you did.
Yeah.
I didn't. Yeah. Like, there's no set path. Like, I kind of got in the back door a wee bit, but like,
yeah. I think comics comes about a lot of careers in comics, and there are university courses and things, but most of the people that I know or I've met are people who just wanted to make comics, and they have a full time job doing something else, but the passion's there, isn't it?
I think you just kind of know whether it's for you or not. I don't know if it sounds dumb, but it's just like, I kind of, when I was in college, I was thinking about going to art school, but I was like, don't want it. I think at the point I've been a student for ages, and I was like, I don't want to be a student any longer. I just want to see how far I can get with it. So I think it's just, you'll know yourself if it's for you or not.
Is there any questions? Anyone got any questions?
Please.
I've got one.
Go ahead.
Although I've already asked you. If you were making your first comic now, and this is such a broad question, it's so like BBC One, what have you learned since starting making comics? What's the tip that you would give your earlier self before you made that first comic? I've got them.
Please look like.
Well, I don't exactly. I'd say start 10 years early. But that's not what you know.
It depends, like, because I, yeah, just finished the run where I'm working in a collaboration, and I've got a story that I'd like to do myself, so I'm now kind of in that sort of situation again. And what I'm doing is just basically trying to find what works for me again. I'm back into that sort of first stages, like, I want to do something different.
It's interesting because the independent comic world is ever changing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you're all doing very different types of comics, but you're still all independent and doing work for yourself, essentially. What keeps you wanting to come back and like come up with new stories or continue the story you're doing?
Just a love for the medium. I love comics.
Yeah.
I get really excited when I see a comic that I like. I love the art.
What keeps that going? I mean, obviously, we love comics, but like you know, social media or some conventions, whatever. Sometimes they can be negative words. You just blank them out. But like a convention can sometimes give you a buzz, can't it? What do you look towards to get inspired?
I think the cool thing about conventions and stuff is you do get to see a lot of other people's artwork and stuff and how other people do stuff, and that is inspiring. Whether you're doing it from a writer's perspective where you're there with your comics or you're there as a punter, like, I think I always come away from conventions and stuff feeling really pumped about comics. I don't know if that's the right word, but and also just from like talking to people about comics or like talking to people who've read my stuff or like kids that really like Dungeon Fun or even like sometimes there's been cosplayers and that's like a big buzz. But that kind of feedback like just it really keeps me going. And there is like I think you were saying earlier that comics is very, very laborious. Like it takes a lot of work to make a comic, and so most of the time you're doing it on your own.
Yeah.
So when you come out into a convention, you're talking to other people and people are giving you feedback and stuff, like it really
because it's an insular thing as well, isn't it? A lot of time making it. Just especially if you're doing it all yourself, if you're writing and drawing and lettering and stuff, you're in a room on your own.
We don't get
it. Helps to go outside. Go outside, people.
Yes, definitely. I mean that's why coming to cons and kind of like meeting other people who do the same thing as you and are kind of like surviving and thriving, you can learn from them, you get a bit of energy off of them, and you kind of re-find your kind of like love for the medium and your drive to do it. I find listening to podcasts whilst I'm working like really, really helps as well. Like it really does kind of like help fuel that sort of motivation to kind of create your stories.
And there is a real community as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
So as soon as you start sort of doing conventions. I mean, you don't have to do conventions either.
No,
you can like, I mean, webcomics, for instance. You know, you could make. There are people who have got these hugely popular webcomics that probably don't table at conventions. I imagine, but they're a huge presence online, and you know, you look at their followers, and I mean, if that's a thing for you, then you know, I think webcomics is a good one. It's certainly something, an avenue that I personally am exploring.
Same.
Because it's a different side of comics as well, like a different audience. Do you find that audiences, you know, I mean, have you experienced with the different books that you've done? How have audiences changed between online to the convention audience to the people buying in shops, for instance? Do you think there's much of a difference between those three audiences?
I don't know. I think online web comics and stuff, it does kind of, because it's so immediate, it does kind of like grab a few more people and stuff. But if you're going for a long form kind of like story rather than short strips of the day, because there are two types of webcomics, you can do kind of like quick short strips that are standalone, or you can do a long form kind of webcomic that updates every so often. The long form one may have like their core sort of like 1,000 followers, 1,000 fans. That don't then kind of change. That once you kind of hit so many updates of like, you know, 200 whatever, you know, people will have to kind of like dig back into the archives and stuff. Mm. But yeah, I don't know. I think webcomics being more immediate probably gets a lot more sort of like footfall traffic, whereas print ones, people love having.
You got to do the physical tour, haven't you? You got to take it on the road, and you got to get it.
Yeah, people love having a physical copy or something, and they're willing to wait as well for you to have, like, if you have multiple issues and whatnot.
Because a lot of it is the. I mean, there's an online presence, but also the. I mean, you guys here will all. There's creators you love, and seeing them at conventions is nice, and, which means that you'll come back to the table, isn't it? So that interaction is very important. Because you're essentially building a following as well, haven't you, as soon as you start making comics.
I mean, that's the thing that I found is the same across any audience in comics, whether you're doing it online or not, is that basically comics people are lovely. Right? Like, I haven't met anyone who's an idiot. Like, I don't understand, there's like a whole internet.
Yeah.
And everyone that writes a comment on YouTube. And then everyone who's in comics, they're, do you know what I mean? This completely different. I've not had one person come up. People come up, look at your stuff. You know, oh, it's not for me. Or do you know what I mean? Yeah. No one's gone. You know, you should set yourself on fire for this. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, like, imagine that.
That means,
you know,
yourself.
You know, everyone's just like, oh my, you know, fantastic, you made this.
Yeah.
You know, like comics. What I've discovered about this, see, it's basically the best bit about. Being nine and drawing with your best mate. Do you know what I mean? Like, you draw a thing and you show your mate, and your mate goes, that's cool, I'm going to do that. And then you take that and then you do it, you know? And then your mate does something different and you go, I like that, I'm going to add that to what I do. And there's this back and forth, and then someone else wanders past and goes, what are you doing? Drawing, oh, that's cool, can I have that? Do you know? And that's basically what DIY comics is. Do you know what I mean? That's the whole experience that I've found last 5 years.
Yeah. That people are nice.
People, turns out, people are actually
that
nice.
That is a bombshell.
Well, yeah. Mate, I'm from North London. You don't make
eye. So, I mean, I guess you guys have. Would you say or consider yourself to have moved on from those first stages of DIY comics? Or do you still want to go back and make those photocopied books and.
I still do them. Like, I still. It's funny because I do, like, I have published books and I do stuff in newspapers and stuff, but I still feel like I still not need to, but I like to do self-published stuff as well, because there are stuff that I like to get out. Like, I do, like, travel logs and stuff, and they are still self-published, but they're just a bit different. Like, my latest one is in colour and it has a tiny spine and stuff like that, but I still feel like
Is it a bit more freeing to do those sort of personal things rather than...
Because I mean, you guys are the same. Like, I just sometimes just like to do a book where I just don't have, like, an editor or a deadline or something like that, and I just want to tell a little story by myself and get it out. And I still feel like I think artists do have a need for that.
Yeah.
It helps just to be like, here's something and it's not edited or it's not... have a deadline or something like that. I think that's important.
With your work as well, I mean, you did it for yourself and then it got picked up. That's essentially it, isn't it? Some people will try to do work for, there's lots of pitches. That's a whole different conversation about working for publishers.
I started by myself and obviously got bigger gigs and stuff, but I always did stuff for myself, and I still do that. I think that's important to keep.
Do you think that's a healthy thing to do?
Yeah,
to
I think it's important to keep doing stuff for yourself and stuff that you enjoy. It's hard to make time for it as well, but I think it really helps. If you're doing a lot of work for other people, and it can sometimes take the fun out of it.
Definitely. I'm in the same boat as you. Like, Matt and I started doing MORP by ourselves, and then we got picked up in Proper Books. So I haven't just finished the fifth issue. It's nice to kind of like have a play with some other things, because as much as I love the story, and I do drawing that for like 5 solid years, it's good. As an artist, you need to kind of like refresh your brain. You need to kind of like have that sort of work on something else, a bit of a palate cleanser to then kind of like come back to it.
And you can do anything. I mean, I know Nick, and this is, when we say comics, you probably maybe think of, you know, your standard way of telling comics, whether it be Adventure Time to Marvel or DC, but you can do anything. I mean, Nick, you're trying like sort of abstract sort of comics that aren't necessarily in your standard narrative structure.
Yeah, and absolutely. And again, it's that thing of I'm literally a point straight at Sarah Harris back there on your podcast, you know, talking about, you know, mixed media, and it just sounded so much fun. I just thought I'll have a play with that. And the reason why I self-publish is because I don't like being told what to do. I don't like being beholden to do something at a certain time. You know, I don't want a boss, and then it turns out I don't even like having me as a boss. You know, so I know that I should be drawing and writing issue 5 of Slam Pictorial, but I've decided I don't want to do that. I want to do this in a minute, and I'm now doing something. Do you know what I mean? I'm my own worst employee.
Yeah, there's the self-inflicted pressures that you put on yourself, isn't there, when you're doing your own work. You know, so you need to be nice to yourself at the same time.
Yes, definitely.
At the same time.
It's tough.
but making comics is still fun for you all. Making comics.
For the most part. Sorry, I do like political comics as well, and I have to do them for a newspaper, and I had to do one yesterday, and I don't know, sometimes it just makes me really sad. But for the most part, comics are really fun.
When you're telling your own stories, you love it. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
But when you were like, sometimes or not, I was like, yeah.
So, but when you do stuff like that, it must be great to just like take your head out of that hole and then just get stuck into like Dungeon Fun or something fantastical or silly. Do you find that healthy, or is it difficult for you to step away from a certain type of work?
No, I think it's easy to wear different hats, and I think especially if you're an artist and you want to go full time, you have to wear different hats. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to be like, I need some commissioned work, and I need some stuff for newspapers, this is my hats, and then I've got my own stuff. You know, you need to be able to like have different fingers and pies and stuff, for sure.
And also sort of learn to work with people, isn't it, and that communication, networking, especially if you're going to go full time. When I was a kid, I had those dreams. Oh, I'm going to work as a comic artist full time. I mean, that's a lovely dream, but then you also have to deal with other people, and that's a skill as well,
I think you need to be good to deal with. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I do get a lot of work and commission work, and I don't think it's because I'm that good. I think it's just because I'm beginning to know that I'll do it and I'll be nice about it. Do you know what I mean?
Being nice goes a long way, though.
Someone who's like not trouble to deal with, and like they'll do the thing. Do you know? I think if you're easy to deal with, it's a bonus.
And then you're more likely to get a repeat customer.
For sure.
Yeah. So, what's been? This is probably going to be hard to narrow down as well. Since you started making comics, what's been one of the highlights of making your own comics?
I think it has to be the people who come to the table, having grabbed like the first one, coming back for the second one, or like sometimes if you've got more than one on the table, coming back the same day. Like, I just read the first one and immediately taken the
same day. Blimey, what about that?
Thought bubble.
Yeah.
And that kind of enthusiasm, that kind of like, you know, gratification that someone enjoys what you have done, it really, really helps. It gives you a massive sort of like, you know, ego stroke. It gives you a massive boost, but it also kind of like, you know, even if you've just got that one kind of like diehard fan, you're doing it for them, and it gives you a reason and a purpose to kind of like keep putting it out there, you know, which is really, really good.
What are you doing?
I've got two highlights, I guess. One, first con, got to speak to Roger Langridge, who's here, and if you don't know his comics, you need to go speak to him. And got to meet, basically, he was like my small press hero. And I've just come back from doing a con where I got to sit next to him and Thomas, his son, who puts out comics. He's 11, and he's got two comic series going.
That's amazing. When you see younger kids making comics.
Yeah, so it's just kind of like meeting your heroes and realising that, you know, they're just they're great, you know, yeah. They're great to talk to. Mm. And the other one is last year, a couple of kids turned up and they'd made paper cutouts of my characters.
Oh, amazing.
And it was just like, my kids won't even read my comics. But,
yeah, that's amazing. What were you now?
I think maybe Ming's is more in line with Sarah. Like, I just love the kind of the feedback, especially from kids and stuff that be like, oh, Dungeon Fun was like the first comic I read or the first book, or like I handed it around my school pals and stuff like that. Like, that's a huge deal for me, because I know like how I felt about comics as a kid, like the Beano and stuff was like a huge thing for me when I was a kid, and now some of my comics are like that to those kids, and that's like a huge buzz for me, which I like.
Awesome. So making comics is a fantastic thing to do, and you should all do it.
Yeah, just do it.
It's never been easier.
No.
But.
It's never been easier, but. That should have been the name of the panel. But yeah, go forth, check out these creators. Any other questions? Anyone have any questions?
Is there any of you have like an ultimate goal? $1 billion, 3-hour movie.
Nick's thinking of it now.
Yeah.
I can see his
movies. I think if I can just keep doing it,
yeah,
I think that's cool. And if I can work in to where I can keep doing more of my own stuff, where I can not do like a lot of kind of paid stuff and other bits and bobs, and just kind of do the fun stuff, I think that's kind
of
one
of the things that I've sort of heard many times is, when you're doing the work for yourself and doing your own work, that's what will get noticed. If you're trying to work for someone else, then it'll always come. Your heart won't be in it so much, necessarily, if you're trying to impress someone else. But, you know, all of these guys have made their own comics, and that's gotten them noticed. And, the film will be in this year.
Yeah, I don't think it should be, like, your ultimate goal to kind of, like, see it on a different medium. Like, I think a lot of people nowadays kind of, like, use comics as an excuse to kind of like go, oh, this is going to be the next Marvel film, you know, and all this sort of thing. But, you know, if you're really kind of like exploring the medium and telling the story in that sort of format, then that's your goal, that's what you want to do, to kind of like tell the story. And hell, if it gets picked up and turned into an animated series, you're not going to sniff at it.
None of them are going to say no.
No.
Thank you to everyone on the panel today. Hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks for coming.
Go forth and check out their work. Thank you very much for
being
on
the panel. Okay, I'm here with Callum, this exquisitely dressed Callum from Grim Comics.
Yes.
Who we've spoken about on the show before. How's your day been?
Yeah, not too bad. It's my first con, so...
Oh, really? It's your first con?
First one ever. I've never even visited or tabled at one.
So no!
A bit of a baptism of fire today.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Because your table setup looks pretty good.
Yeah, it's changed throughout the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I got rid of stuff, added things, and moved things around. But, I'm...
How's the first day experience been then? Because obviously... We've talked about it on the show before, it is hard work at a convention, even though it is fun and you're around comics all day.
Yes, I don't know how people can do 3 days.
Really?
Yeah, I've been up since 5.
Oh, so, wow, I feel your pain.
Yeah, so I want bed.
Yeah, but you must, I mean, obviously there's the enthusiasm of just getting your comic out there. And
definitely.
For those people who don't know, and I must say Grimm's got some of the best covers.
That is all thanks to Emiliano Correa. He's absolutely a wizard.
Yeah.
I didn't find out that the first issue he did basically digitally with a mouse.
What?
Yeah.
So he's basically a warlock.
Pretty much.
For those people who don't know what Grim Comics is, just tell us a bit about the actual comics themselves.
So we have two comics out. So we've got Peace of Mind, which is like a sci-fi dystopian about VR addiction and corporate greed, you know, the normal cyberpunk kind of vibes. And the other one is Maya by Angus Medford. And he wrote it, he's done all the art, he lettered it all himself. It's just that I'm trying to get it out there for him and help him with that. And that's more of a horror kind of like government conspiracy vibe to it.
Yeah.
So those are the two things. And we've got prints from a variety of people. Myself, Emiliano, and another illustrator called Hannah Baber from Bristol. So she's got a couple. So
where are you guys based?
Shrewsbury. I recently moved to Shrewsbury. So I found out quite recently that's a big comics hub. So it's got like Adlard.
Really?
Yeah, it's got Charlie Adlard.
Oh, yes,
I think he's
got
a museum exhibition at the moment called Drawing of the Dead.
That was the Comic Salopia, wasn't it?
Yeah. This is a big thing there.
Yeah, so how is your journey into comics? Is these two issues have appeared fairly quick. I mean, how many issues have you released in a year? How long have you been going
Peace of Mind issue one was pretty much the dying end of 2017. And we're launching the Kickstarter for the third one on the 1st of November.
Oh, right.
So, not too bad. Yeah, so before we just kickstarted the printing costs.
Yeah.
But comics are expensive.
Yes.
You know, pay your creative team.
Yes.
Yeah, so, unfortunately, I'm not at a stage where I can just split the dough.
Yeah.
So we're going to be kickstarting the whole hog.
Yeah.
On the 1st of November.
And that's for what? Peace of Mind
issue 3. Right. So 3 of 4, basically.
Oh, so it's a 4 issue.
It's a 4 issue one. Yeah. And then we'll see how it goes from there, but this arc can finish at 4.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I'm guessing you've learned so much already through the.
Yes. Mainly from Rob Jones. He gets everywhere like a rash.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. It's like the SARS virus, but in a nice
way. Yeah.
In a lovely way. Yeah.
But yeah, he's been really good. So he does subtle things like he'll flip panels around and just go, no, this is how it should flow. And you know, he's always a delight to work with. So,
oh wow!
Yeah, he's good. That's, so that's mega nice. Praise for him.
Yeah. So what other plans have you got in the future? Now? I mean, after the Kickstarter.
Yes.
Or are they top secret?
No, not really. I've got a few things. I'm just juggling everything, to be honest.
And you've decided to start doing conventions.
Yes. Yeah. What are hobbies? what is a work-life balance?
Yeah.
What
made you actually start to do conventions now? Because, like I said, the comics have been... How have you put the comics out up until now? For those people that may not be able to get to conventions, how have you found like marketing your books without a convention?
It's hard. Like... I'm not an artist. Like, I dabble. I don't really. I've only got one print that I'm happy with that I will sell. I found Kickstarters are the only way, really. Web stores haven't really done much for me.
Really?
A mailing list. I'm not a fan of mailing lists because I find that most people get spammed by mailing lists. When I get people to sign up, it is, I will contact you every 2 to 3 months. If I've got something to say, I'll say it.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to email you every single week with a load of tosh saying, please buy my stuff that you've already bought, which is why you're on my mailing list. But, I found that I've hit the wall. So I do think you need to schmooze and go to Comic-Con.
There's
and
a lot
talk
of networking as well.
Yes, I hate networking, but it needs to be done.
Yeah, well, you're here now.
I'm here now. I'm in the room.
So what are you looking to achieve from that sort of networking? Is it like getting in touch with like new artists, you know, possible
creators
and publishers, etc.?
It's mostly fellow creatives and just kind of seeing how things work. I'm still looking from the outside, I think, anyway, because I still don't know how things are done properly.
Yeah.
You know, I stuck to one format of script writing. It works for me. It works for my current artist, but it might not work for another one down the road.
Yeah,
so
true,
things
yeah.
just constantly evolve. But yeah, no, I think my next project is, I hate period pieces, but I've done a period piece.
It's like artists who hate drawing horses and then they write a Western for themselves.
Yeah.
Is that sort of thing?
Yeah, so I was thinking Victorian gangsters is going to be the next one.
Nice.
So it's going
and
to
then
be
you've got to find the artist for it.
Yes. Yeah, so still looking. Yeah. Still looking.
So where can people find your comics, etc.?
We're on Instagram and Twitter at Grim Comics, which is G-R-Y-M Comics.
Yeah.
It's a Welsh word. And we also have a web store called grimcomics.co.uk.
Nice. Go check it out. I mean, you'll see what I mean about the covers. They're instantly recognisable. In terms of conventions, are you doing any more?
Not this year. I'm going to steadily, and then 2 next year. just one day as a thing. I don't think I can do MCM and all that yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
You'll be a pro shortly.
Yeah, we can't all just be Matt Garvey.
No. He's a monster.
He is. Yeah. He is. Fair play to him. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Callum.
Yeah. Cheers. Thank you.
Look, I don't know if it will pick up, but no, if it does, it does. Anyway, I mean, is this a panel? People have just been listening to us chat for about 5 minutes. Yeah, welcome to the British Comics panel, which is quite a broad title for a panel. But I've got three fantastic guests to help me talk about it. And don't make eye contact because you put me off. I'm about to introduce Nigel first, who's halfway through eating an apple. But yeah, he's known for his work on the Beano, namely one character who goes by the name Dennis, Nigel Parkinson.
Yeah, I've drawn Dennis the Menace, yeah.
This is going to be the panel of the day. I'm also joined by a creator known for books such as The Rabbit and Why Not Wrong. It's Rachel Smith. And also writer, journalist, now part of No Brow Press, Tony Esmond.
Hello. Thank you very much.
Vincent. Yes.
And also on a podcast with him, which you may find out later.
Oh, I see. Oh, well, we've met before, haven't we? So there are.
Well, and I know Tony, so this is going to go very badly.
Isn't it hot at Olympia?
Is it what?
Wasn't it hot at Olympia? You know, Friday,
I honestly did think that the panel about British comics was going to be the one it's that went off the rails.
It's hot at Olympia.
It is. It's hotter in here right now.
I'm telling you.
Anyway, right, okay, let's start this very grown-up discussion, which obviously is about British comics, which has a rich and varied history, from wartime epics to schoolyard gangs and personal autobiographical comics and literary adaptions. Which sounds like quite an introduction, but I think I'll just start the conversation by asking you guys, how healthy do you think the British comics industry and culture is at the moment? Who would like to begin? No, just drinking, so...
I'll go. Still with apple on the go.
Yeah.
We've had our best year at Umbrella this year. So in the last 18 months, probably, we've been more successful than we've ever been. And I think it's mostly for a sort of community by building thing. I think if you build a community around comics, I think they will sell. Mm-hmm. But I can't speak for the rest of the industry, but we're doing all right.
I mean, No Brow's very much an international company as well, though, isn't it? Because
from the people we employ to make the books, and we have a New York office, but it's only two guys. But we are an East London company. You know, we started in East London, we're still there. You know, for us, it's gone all right. I can't speak for the rest of the industry. I don't know anything about that, but. Yeah, for us it's alright.
Yeah. What about you, Rachel? How do you?
I mean, I'm not starved. I'm doing alright.
Yeah. Is that yacht? Is that yacht alright?
One of them, sorry. Yeah.
Because you've had like several different experiences. You've had Kickstarters, you've obviously been with publishers, you've tried both comics as well, and you know, all different kind of things.
Yeah, self published, I've been published.
So, I mean, and you've been very much on the sort of convention circuit and scene as well, haven't you? So, you know, seeing that side of British comics, is it thriving?
It feels like it is. I mean, it's hard to come to events like this and say otherwise, I think. And, you know, I've got Thought Bubble coming up, which always inspires me no end. It feels very rich and varied and exciting at the minute. I can only really speak from my... Like, I'm not a business person, but, you know.
Nigel, are you a business person?
Well, yeah, I am. Yeah, I've got a business. The British comics industry, let me tell you about it, it's doing very well. About 5 years ago, I did my first... No, 4 years ago, I did my first ever convention. Because I'd been asked, and I'd always said no. Because I didn't like the sound of it. And then I did it, and they gave me an award at it. I thought, I like these things. But as I was giving my acceptance speech, I noticed a huge room full of people who, you know, all had their own tables and doing small press, and some were big publishers and some were... And I said, it's thriving. When I was starting, when I was 20, which is 40 years ago, there you go, I've admitted it, my mother told the neighbours that I was unemployed rather than working in comics because she was so ashamed of me working in comics.
Really?
Yes. And now, she's still with us, she's 90. still with us. She says, oh, my son, yes, he draws comics. Yes, he draws Dennis the Menace and the Bean. Yes, that's right. So it's come a long way. And, you know, I'm very glad it has, because it's given me something to do at the weekend. Completely
his
things.
Get and, the other house.
Exactly. Yeah. And in the week, you know, I draw.
Well, you make a living, yeah.
Yeah. It's 7 days a week. But, you know, it's hard work.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to think it's easy to make a living drawing comics, because it's not. But it's very enjoyable.
Yes.
But it is hard work, and you have to be self-disciplined, and you have to run yourself as a business, kind of, even though you don't think you do. You do, really.
You do.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't necessarily think of comics as a business, do they? You know, I think on the grander scale, you know, when it comes to media, they think it's still the hobby, it's still a bit of fun, and which, you know, obviously it is. But when you're working in comics, a completely different kettle of fish, isn't it?
Oh, when you freelance, the amount of things you have to do now. I left a job which is PAYE, which I did for 31 years, and now I have to figure out, I'm stapling receipts off. Yeah, it's like
I spend most of my week doing that kind of thing.
Yeah,
I should be drawing. And I, sorry, it's your turn.
No, no, man, you got you know better than me.
No, that's the thing. That's the business aspect. It's changed so much because I used to have an accountant that I went to, and he'd say, how much did you earn? And I said that. He said, right, pay the government 35%. Fine. But now there's so many ins and outs and ups and downs, and I've got assistants, and I've got people who drive me, and I've got, because I don't drive, and I draw.
I don't drive, I draw. There's a t-shirt.
So, yeah. I've got that one. So there's so many things you have to do. I say, even if you know, we'd rather be sitting drawing. You have to have half your mind on is it worth doing? How's it going to play out at the end of the financial year, you know? Yeah. And that's the bit that I didn't realise when I started. I thought it'd just be fun. It's better than getting a job, isn't it, sitting around drawing? Yeah. But then you have to do all that stuff yourself.
So. Then it becomes the job and all of that.
It's like anything. If you do it well enough, if you do your hobby well enough, it becomes a job. And then it's the hardest job you could ever get. Yeah. Because you know how hard you have to work at it anyway. And then you get successful, people ask you to do more. And you always say yes, you never say no, do you? Because you never know if you're going to be asked again. I've been talking rather a lot.
I was going to say, I'm like 6 months into working full-time for a comic company.
Yeah.
And I'm still reading comics. Do you still read comics as well as draw? No. Okay, I hear that a lot, though. Yeah.
I stopped reading comics in 1969. It was Easter.
Did you go to Vietnam? Was that right? You got kicked out.
I was actually in Formby near Southport, Lancashire.
Okay, same.
And I was reading a comic which I'd enjoyed very much for the previous year. I just thought, I can't bother with this anymore. Put it aside. I haven't read one since.
Wow.
I know that sounds strange, but I haven't.
What about you, Rachel? Are you still reading comics?
Yeah.
You read Vince's, don't you? So you do.
I do, yeah. I think, not to go against what Nigel just said, but for me it's important to contextualise what I'm doing with what's being published. I also read a lot of, you know, not proper books, you know. I think it's really important as a writer to read and get told stories. So I also watch TV and films and play video games, although not too many video games. I play Tetris for 50 hours. Why can't I write? You know, just I think it's important to be told stories in a lot of different ways. I think that helps your writing become
richer. Certainly, yeah, there's a larger variety, especially with British comics as well, like the types of stories being told.
Mm.
It's never been more diverse and wide, is it? It's sort of like, you know, comics. You could argue you used to be seen as you either had your superheroes, your wars, or you know, the big
stuff.
Yeah. But now you have the autobiography, you have the personal art. But the extra level with that, and certainly with self-published creators, is the advent of social media things, which now that's probably one of the biggest things in British comics, social media.
Yeah.
It's a huge. I mean, even if you're loath to use it, or whatever your medium, social media, you have to use it in British comics, don't you?
You do.
My career would be very different if I didn't have things like Twitter and Facebook.
Mm. Are you on Twitter, Nigel?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be. I wanted to be one of those people who, you know, make one tweet.
Yeah.
And that's it. When I died, I said, oh, you only made one tweet. But I've made up thousands, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, because it's very hard for me to say, I must stop gesticulating, it looks terrible. The Beano is one of those things that is like, is part of British comics, but it's kind of outside it as well, because it's been going since 1938, which is a long time. And it's recently, the last 5 years, has sold more physical copies in the shops than the previous year.
Really?
And if, yeah, wow. And in fact, it's sold over 40,000 a week now, which is more than, you know, most big American comics sell.
Yeah.
And yet,
think,
we never
I mean, just on a side note, do you think that's anything to do with the Dandy sort of less of a...
No. No, because that was 10 years ago, and this is only the last five years. I don't know. People have said, is it because of the success of the Marvel movies? But it hasn't got Marvel comics.
So Marvel comics don't sell anymore because of their movies, yeah.
And you think that might be a tie-in. It's not, I don't know what it is. Apart from, you know, the brilliance of the contributors. That's
but so social media...
Oh,
well,
yeah, that's right, yeah.
Even more important.
Yeah, you do have to tag things, and I mean, I'll be tagging this event. I think I've already done it. I'll be putting a picture. Someone will have put a picture up already of me smiling, signing something for them, and you get invited to these things and you meet people. And that's one of the great things. It's one of the great things about these what are they called, cons, is that you meet people who've read your work. And I met someone this morning who was very knowledgeable about my work.
No more than you?
Well, he said, now those two issues you did in 1998 where you did this, and I was like, that's weird. I mean, it's very nice if you're in here. It's very nice. But it's like a bit odd, you know, because I'd forgotten it. But then I did do it. And I suppose it's like the William Shatner moment, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
But I think social media's been great, and it's also been quite evil. But it's been great for us.
It can be a double-edged sword.
Yeah, like anything. I think we're still getting come to terms with how it works.
Yeah.
I can see how it's made things a lot easier for the autobiographical writer and artist, because it's put you right in touch with the people who are interested in your work.
It's a cheap marketing tool. That's a good thing about it. You used to pay thousands to get that. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And you found with your work, Rachel, which some of it's quite personal. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a it must be a hugely valuable tool.
Oh, for sure.
Connected with readers as well, I guess. Because as well as marketing the books and like getting the word out about the work, you've got there's a direct contact between reader and creator now, isn't there? Which there never was, you know, in the 80s.
Yeah.
You had to travel for miles to go to a convention to maybe steal a couple of words with the creator. Whereas now someone could read your book and say...
Take a picture of it, send it to you while they're reading it.
Especially with platforms like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, your customers become part of the actual making of the book. They fund it for you, it feels like more of a community than.
Yeah.
I genuinely think that's the way forward for books. I think that's the way we survive. It's by growing that community. That's what we do. You know, we have our own festival to encourage people to continue to buy books, you know.
And then you get the repeat people coming back to that festival, much like you would with a book, people coming back to the table and stuff. So it is, I mean, with the British comics community, how can we then expand it then? Because comics is always very much that glass ceiling, isn't it? You always, you know, do you think there is a glass ceiling?
Yeah,
or do you think we can... It will just keep getting bigger and bigger.
We're always coming up with ideas of how to get ourselves into other areas. So we've never done MCM, for example. We kind of shied away a little bit from that sort of crazy visual overload of a convention.
But
we now do it. Do you know what I mean? And we are finding that people who like My Little Pony or whatever they like are now buying our books as well. So we're getting other eyeballs on it, which is the only way we're going to grow our product, you know.
I think so, yeah.
Because every reader is an important reader, aren't they? It's not like, you know... I mean, if you go look at it by the numbers, every sale is a sale, isn't it?
Exactly.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, and we're very much, even if, say, for example, we did a festival and it wasn't quite a big moneymaker, we've talked to people who've never seen our books before.
Mm.
They may well buy another book. You know, you've got to put money out there to invest in it, I think, sometimes with that as well.
So, but how, Rachel, I know you've done some conventions. Is it Toronto?
Yeah.
You've been to conventions?
TCAF.
Yeah,
TCAF. ECCC, Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle,
so,
and I've done New York.
Quite a major difference in culture, really, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
How is that different? How would you say that differs from the British comics community?
Like, going to cons, you mean?
Yeah, that convention experience. And...
People are a lot more confident to come and talk to you.
Definitely.
Whereas in Britain, sometimes you have to literally say, like, you can pick that up if you want to. Like, you can, it's all right. I'm not going to force you to buy anything. And yeah, they will. So that, for me, was the biggest difference. Just the
is that quite a shock, though, when you're first there? And then?
A little bit, yeah. You'll be like, oh, you're coming right at me. Usually I have a bit of a barrier where people don't want to cross.
Yeah, it's like making eye contact thing in England as well, isn't it? They don't always make, you know, how are you doing? And they're like...
Yeah, people do this with my books a lot, and then just go away like that.
That's
and look at me, it's fine.
I had exactly the same experience in New York a few weeks ago. And
really?
People walk... I always think American comics is kind of an American art form. Mm. So they know what they're getting. Sometimes at MTM, I have to explain to people what a comic is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's like that. Oh, they still do the Beano. You must get that.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
But it works the other way around as well. Like, people will give you the hard sell if you're just walking. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a guy, I didn't even look at him, but he was like, hey, do you like humour? And I was like, well, I'm going to seem like a right twat if I don't do that.
No,
I hate laughing.
Yeah.
Would
you punch him?
Yeah. But also, it's just super... super big over there. Yeah. Like, I don't know, we think MCM London is big, and it's about the size of one of the rooms at New York. It is just crazy. Yeah. It can take you like half an hour to get from
one
building to another.
We were going for lunch, and it was taking us half an hour just to get to the
coffee stand. So you've done San Diego?
Well, I went to San Diego once. I didn't do it as a guest. This was a long time ago. And it was just stupidly big. That's one of the reasons I didn't want to do a con, because I thought they were all going to be, not necessarily that, like that in scale, but like that in feel, you know, just a lot of people who you didn't want to be in the same room as, all shouting at you.
It's definitely a different experience. Those very large multimedia shows are different.
San Diego, even then, was all about movies, TV shows. I mean, I know a lot of the ones that we do have a lot of actors in them and all that, but... I quite like these words, just, you know, the thought bubble and the lakes and things like that, where it's just about
just comics.
Yeah.
You get lost a little bit, I think, when it's
I did one in Exeter a couple of years ago. It was just me and about 50 actors and 20 wrestlers.
I thought you were just going to say it was just
what
me.
What
are
you doing?
That's not a pun, Nigel. That's just you going to lunch.
It was like a little cafe, wasn't it?
Nigel Cole.
He took his shirt off and he wrestled everyone.
And we had Robert, is it Robert England?
Yeah.
He was in the car with me because we were miles from anywhere at the hotel, you know the way they do these things. And we were being driven, and he kept saying, well, can you go a bit slower? I'm a bit scared. These corners are a bit. Can you go a bit slower? Freddy Krueger terrified. That's what I was. Made my day.
Can't pull his face off and there's a reptile underneath.
Yeah. You just thought it'd be a looking guy, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think. Back to sort of British comics and stuff, and something that's quite prevalent to this show, this convention in particular, is I think the uptake in kids' comics. Oh, well, I say an uptake. This show, there's families everywhere, which is fantastic to see. Mm. Because I think we've all been at conventions where there's not so much of a family-friendly presence, or, you know, they're all late 40s or something. Or
Sheffield.
Or
just the whole city.
Sheffield has no family. It's all
the tram system. I know you've got good trams here, but these are brilliant. And the conductor told me why. It was because
he's done it on purpose, Vince.
I thought you were going to be the problem.
I'm always the. I don't know why they put me on pants. I'm always the problem.
This is amazing. This is gold. But like the boom in kids comics. I want to say. But I mean, like you say, in the last 5 years, if the Beano's do.
Yeah.
Do you think that bodes even better news for the coming future? Because we always thought we need more readers. If comics are going to survive, we need more readers. That's something you said at the time.
Yeah.
So with the uptake in kids' comics and stuff like that being more popular, surely that can only.
I mean, we've obviously got Hilda. So Hilda's our big book, which is a kids' book. But we build up from Hilda. So we realise people reach the end of the Hilda books and will be of a certain age. So they maybe start when they're 7, they'll finish Hilda when they're sort of 10. And we have got the book to jump on after that. So we're very conscious of keeping hold of them after that as well.
Because I think that it's keeping hold of them, isn't it? Because
certainly there's a lot of creators probably here today that said, oh, when I went to college I stopped reading comics for like 10 years. How do you keep hold of
it? You can drift off. I was 9 or 10 when I stopped reading comics and I've never started again.
He's working and stops.
I don't know how. I couldn't do anything else. I can't drive, so I couldn't be a milk float driving. I had to get a job in comics, really. So if there'd been something of interest in me, I might have carried on reading, but there wasn't then. You know, in 1969 was the point where things started. Like Conan, I don't think it even started.
Conan was 71,
And all that, like Luke and all that stuff was still way in the future. So there was nothing of any, and it was too late by the time I was 13, 14, you know, to get back into it. And I've seen comics since. I've seen your books. They're great.
Thanks.
I don't think I've seen yours, but I can't look at all of them. But, you know, I appreciate them very much, and I think it's great that we've got this British comic industry, because as far as I was concerned, it was only the Beano and the Dandy 10 years ago, and now there's, like, millions of them everywhere you look at it. And some of them only sell 50 copies, but that's fine, because that's a start. And some of them sell hundreds of thousands, and that's great, too. And, you know, then there's the Beano. I think we're going to carry on appealing to people who like to read, because it's not just like pictures with a bit of a story. They're actual things to get engrossed in, like a movie or a TV show or a book. Comics aren't like some lesser thing.
And
one of the great things, can I just say? One of the great things I think about the current boom is that you don't have to be a brilliant artist or a brilliant writer to do it. What you have to be is you have to be sort of honest about what you're saying and doing and put it down in a way that people can understand. It's all very well, these great guys who like to do sinews and brick walls with every brick. I can't read those things because they don't speak to me at all. They don't say anything to me.
Sometimes it takes them so long to make it, you'll never see it.
You look at it for, 5 seconds?
Exactly. You look at it for 5 seconds. Why should you put a week's work into something that people didn't look at for 5 seconds? The entirety of the thing is what counts. So it doesn't matter if you've got a couple of dodgy drawings or everything's in silhouette. The point is that the whole thing should work, and we should look at it as a, you know, not just a great drawing. It's not a great drawing. I don't care.
Have you ever never worked for the Beano?
No, I nearly did.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought that your style would suit it, I think. I can imagine.
Put it on my CV. Nearly.
I'm sorry, I got a bit serious then.
I was going to say, like a comic, it's more about the communication than anything else. As long as your picture and your words communicate what you want, it doesn't have to be the best drawing in the world. XKCD is just stick figures, but that's like the most famous webcomic ever. I also wanted to say the Phoenix is doing really good.
Getting
kids into comics and just getting kids reading.
Yeah.
Like, comics are great for reluctant readers.
And pushing past
Fairspark as well while we're here.
Yeah.
So Fairspark is kind of, they're bringing out kind of an all ages anthology monthly.
Yeah.
And they're doing well. They're good guys.
Yeah.
And there's a new one coming out in a few months as well. Don't know if I can mention it yet, but Tim Quinn, in his day, is back, and he's doing a kids' comic. So
he gives a good panel.
I learned everything. No, I didn't have anything for them.
Tim Quinn and Dickie Howitt, they were you've worked on Doctor Who, and they were quite famous for doing the short strips on Doctor Who, weren't they, as well?
That's another element to it. It's not just, I mean, you have like the Beano and the Phoenix and etc., but you do have like the Doctor Who comics, which is like a magazine that has a comic in it, which some people overlook because it might just look like a magazine, but there's comics within it. I think it's great to see those on the shelves. Really. It's hard work to get weekly comics onto like a how many times do you see them in newsagents front and centre anymore?
It's the distribution that's the problem, because you have to pay so much to get it distributed. It's not really worthwhile. I mean, that's why, who was it, Egmont and Fleetway died a death, because they just couldn't afford to.
I do quite a lot with distributors, and I think we're getting to the point now where the distributors don't understand comics, because they've drifted away so far. They understand kids' comics, they understand paperbacks, they understand, you know, trading cards, but they don't understand. I've had to go into distributors and give them a talk about comics. Come out on a Wednesday, and this is, you know, and they don't understand it. They really don't.
They think it's just a way of selling a bit of plastic tat, you know, a toy, or gun or something. They don't understand what it actually is. on that sad note.
Do we have any questions?
Yeah, go on.
No. 2 for 2. I'll do it for
anyone today. Still awake?
Tumbleweeds.
How do you contrast this experience of coming to this con with MCM in London? What's the pros and cons of those two?
It takes you 10 minutes to get into this convention. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever tabled at MCM. You try and leave from a big.
Oh, yeah,
it took me 2 hours to leave.
They
wouldn't let you leave. Yeah. I find that MCM as well, you have to explain to everyone what a comic is. Yeah. They come to the table and you say, have you ever read a comic? Do you know what a comic is? And then you have to sort of build them up.
Is that really... I mean, that may have been the experience for you, but was that like your guys' experience with like those sort of shows?
I find it hard to have a conversation at MCM. Because everyone's just packed in like sardines, so they have they just all go by like that, and you're like, oh, would you... Okay.
it's really hard. Yeah.
I've had several... full conversations today. It's been lovely.
Oh, well done.
For me, the main difference between a big show at MCM, I don't say Olympia can be, I mean, the summer one's very big, isn't it? It's not as big as MCM, it's not as big as America, but it's bigger than here. The main difference I find is you have a lot of people coming to these who want to chat to you and reminisce or ask questions. And it's MCM and Olympia, they, frankly, you just want them to come in and give you money and leave.
Yeah.
You're not really interested in the shop because there's so many of them. And a lot of them are asking the same questions. Oh, I didn't know the Beano was still going. Which characters do you draw? How long have you been doing it? I mean, I love those questions, but not from everybody.
Do you just print the answers out and put it on the
table? I've considered doing that. There's some things I have printed out.
Just holding up signs.
I saw Biz at an American convention recently, and they had a sign with all the regularly asked questions on their table.
Well, Simon would
yes, we're from England. Yes, it is. No, it's not a kids' comic. They had that already out.
People don't read it, though, because I'm a kids' comic. Yeah, exactly.
I think I find it, once I get MCM, people don't seem to want to be told stories. They tend to want commissions. Or they buy my flimsy book, which is fine. Whereas if I have more time with people, they tend to buy the bigger stories. Yeah. They're like, oh, that sounds interesting.
So would you say that like shows like that are more merchandise shows than comic shows, whereas something like these ones are more
people
comics.
Buy prints and commissions and
we do really well pins in badges.
And badges, whereas at ones like this, people are like, oh, what's this about? That sounds really good, I'll take that. Whereas I think at the really, it might just be a time thing. Like they want to pick something up and immediately understand what it is.
Yeah.
Whereas if they pick like the rabbit up and I start, okay, it's about two sisters who, okay, you've gonna got a hot dog, cool. they just don't have time to have a conversation with you.
Yeah. So let's try and end on a high. Ooh, okay. right.
Yeah.
What gives you the biggest hope about British comics moving forward? What are you most hopeful about?
Seeing.
Who wants to go first?
I think seeing kids getting excited about comics and you know them reading a comic and then saying I'm going to go home and draw now and that gives me a lot of hope.
I certainly especially as well like kids, obviously you see more kids like cosplaying as well but those kids cosplayers are usually readers of that comic and then they're buying the comics as well which is quite cool to see.
Seen a few Hilders recently.
Yeah, we've had a few. It's been good Hilders today. So good. For me, I've started seeing, now I'm on the shared drive, I've started seeing all the comics that are coming in getting submitted.
Nice.
And the new comics we're getting from really good talent. I mean, not blowing our own horn, but we won the Eisner Best Newcomer 2 years running now, and they're crackers, absolute crackers. I think we're going to win the next one. So there's great talent out there. It's coming up. I think it's coming up through animation fields now rather than drawing. I think that's where it's coming from.
Yeah,
I'm tabling next to a girl who studied animation, storyboards and stuff. And that, you know, there's a lot of transferable skills.
Just the fact that we have so many of these cons. 5 years ago, there were half as many. 5 years before that, we were like 4 a year. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great because you do see a lot of kids coming and they're very enthusiastic. So, not today, but at other shows I've had, kids just white hot enthusiasm for drawing.
Yeah.
You know, and can you look at what I've drawn? And I say, you know, oh yeah, that's really nice. And here's a little tip, try that. And they're so excited about it. Well,
does that get you even more into use? Because obviously you had quite a long career of drawing comics.
I've had a long career. Nothing really. No, I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah. Because a lot of people do say coming to a convention like this, they'll come away from it and they're energised by comics.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, when we do the big one, like MCM is a shocker because that's the one I was... Oh, no, I'm thinking of Excel now.
Yeah, that's where MCM is.
Oh, is it? Well, you have to get on that train and then you get off and then you go... I said, you're so tired after a day at that place and you have to get on that... Whereas these, you just stroll down to the stage and hop off. Oh, really
are
nice.
You going to talk about trams again now?
Well, the next panel is trams and comic conventions.
1:30 in the room.
We haven't had trams around from, and I think we should have them. I think they're
marvellous. Apart from where they fall over.
Oh, remember that? That was shocking.
And on that...
Anyway, trams, that's the future, folks.
Yeah. And on that bombshell, thank you very much for coming to this panel. Visit all of these wonderful
people. Yeah, please visit me.
Yeah. And, we've got free badges if you come to our table.
All he's got is his apple.
He's eating that. So, yeah, thank you very much, guys.
Give me an apple.
Thank you.
I'm here with Tony Esmond of Nobrow. Press, comics, what is it? What is the official title?
Tony is my Nerf gun expert.
The Nerf gun incident, which will be brought up on the next show.
I almost lost my temper.
I genuinely said that to him.
At least you didn't.
No.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
But, so is he used to me.
See, I thought I'd come interview you as a exhibitor.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
We've got some panels, hopefully.
I acted sensibly in a panel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, almost. I laughed at Nigel Parkinson talking about trams quite a lot. And then I accused him of being in Vietnam.
People might not have heard that yet. That might,
Sorry.
That might be coming in a second.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
But yeah, that was a great panel. But how's the rest of your day been?
Good, yeah. It's been busy. I did your panel as a sat on the panel, the May Faces. And then I did a panel with Lorenzo Etherington and Martin Simmons, who's standing beside of me, on covers. And that went quite well, actually. I was quite pleased. Yeah. I did a visual PowerPoint thing. Oh, no, I feel like Alan Partridge suddenly.
Yeah, you are the Alan Partridge of comics.
Cooler, a better hair.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Your luscious hair.
He's looking like a golden waterfall today. Yeah. I was shouting to Sarah, where's she gone? We were talking about, I think, the sort of the water in the air. The condensation has affected my... It's just hot in here, isn't it?
It's just you.
Yeah, I'm really hot.
All right. Spur of the day. Yeah, so the Nobrow books have been going well.
Yeah,
good. A few cosplayers, I see.
We had... I only saw one. Did you see more than one?
I don't know. I saw one for definite. I thought there were a couple more.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
But, yeah, it's just coming to the end now. I've been running around trying to get some interviews, and every time I want to interview someone, they're not at their bloody table.
You interview me instead.
Yeah, I thought
I'm going to be on the show anyway because I'm always on it.
I know.
It's going well though. This is going well.
We tell you how desperate I am for an interview right now.
So sales have been good. Yeah, it's been quite an experience. I've had a good day. Sarah's there. Look, see Sarah and Martin.
Yeah, there.
It's been like a friendly day.
Don't point things out on an audio.
Oh yeah.
Medium.
Look at that.
It's massive.
Mouse.
Oh. yeah, so successful day for Nobrow.
I think so, yeah. Not quite as good as last year, but
this is the Tony Esmond at the end of the convention that everyone wants. That's what I love about this.
It's been alright. No, it has been alright. Yeah. We both did a couple of panels, didn't we? So we were away for a couple of bits, but otherwise, yeah, pretty good.
And you've got MCM up next, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
For Nobrow. Be positive. This is PR. You're not a host now, you're a guest. So,
MCM's going to be great. Thursday, we're doing the setup, me and Ulla, and then I'm doing it with a couple of different people from the office.
Any new books at that one?
No, not different to today.
But what about Thought Bubble?
Yeah, and we've got the Hilda exhibition across the road, so.
Nice.
We'll talk about that later, but yeah, it's all right. So, you're going to Thought Bubble, aren't we?
Yeah,
is your going with your missus?
That remains to be seen.
Oh no, something happened.
No.
Oh, why are you giving me that look?
Because I thought you were sharing a room with me.
I'm in the hotel. So
what was that? But the what? And Mrs.
How's it gone for you? Interview you. How's it gone?
It's been
for
a
you?
Good day.
You give your beard a trim. It's nice.
Thanks. I put a comb through it. You should try it.
No. I've got something for the way home. I've got some tomato and some cheese in there.
You know the live, don't you?
How's it gone, though? Good?
Yeah, it's been good. It's been
who have you really liked today?
One of the busier convention days of the year.
You seem to have collected cups on your table, cups and bottles.
I always do. So in a minute, I'm really going to... Yeah, God bless all the helpers and organisers, Kev and Cow and all their team.
Yeah, they've been great, actually. Yeah. Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All the Bretts.
Kev did a panel as well. I think it went pretty well. From what I hear, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. Kev said, oh, I've got to do a panel, I'll blame you. And he's really good in it. Yeah. So that's fine. Yeah, yeah. I can see Stuart down the end there as well. Yeah. He's got a new comic out, hasn't he?
Yeah. I got his Jason.
Giving me the bees.
I got his Jason Isaacs.
Oh, do you? Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, big shout out to all the helpers at...
Yeah, no, really good.
Really good.
Yeah.
Definitely come to this convention if you're in
the
area.
You know, I really think so, and... It's not a bad selling convention from the point of view of selling stuff. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. From the sort of just Comic Cons in the country, it's probably up there, definitely. Yeah. I'd probably do the same in a day as I would do at Thought Bubble, put it that way.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. 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 Nice. So on that sort of wavelength, it's quite good. Yeah, yeah.
Nice. So there you go. I don't know if I'll do a sign off after this.
Anthony's tired.
Anthony is tired, so I'm going to let him to crawl back under his bridge for the night.
Look at that.
No. Stop it. It's looking at us. Yeah. But do you know what? You talk about Nobrow. Do I need to say where can people find the book? Go on. Do it.
Nobrow.net.
There you go.
Nobrow Press on Twitter.
There you go.
You're
not in control of that, are you? No. So it's actually professional.
Well, they wouldn't give me control of it, would they, for Christ's sake?
No.
I think the things I'd do with it.
There's another quote of the day.
I've got to pack all this crap up now.
All right. We're not off the record yet.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Lovely seeing you.
Yeah, and you.
Why are you not wearing your T-shirt?
There you go. Another Nottingham Comic Con in the bag.
Dang, we've done well. You did well there, mate. That was good.
Oh,
really good.
Thank you.
Yeah. We had a chuckle. And I was chatting to Nigel after the panel as well. He is a funny guy.
Yeah.
But it may be a future guest, possibly.
Nice one. Look forward to listening to that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great day, and thank you to everyone that came up and chatted. There was a lot of creators as well that came over to the table.
Loads, yeah.
And just people in general that, you know, if this is the first time you're checking out the show, because I know we've got a couple of new listeners probably this week.
Yeah.
Hope you enjoyed those panels, and please stay tuned, or not, because this show can sometimes go off the rails.
What?
Sometimes.
What show?
What?
Yeah, it was good, man. And there's a couple of new listeners came over to the Nobrow table as well, actually. Yeah.
Cool. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Yep. Do we have any other shout-outs? Oh, I just want to give a shout-out to Gordon Brett, who's a good fan
and
of
Sam. I think Sam's his son, isn't he? Is that right?
Yeah.
So, nice people. Yeah, yeah. They were both really helpful when we were unloading the car and first thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good.
And there was a lot of help we had at the tables as well, so it was great. So,
yeah.
Great team of people.
And do you know what? The thing I liked about it as well is the space we had. No one was crammed in.
Yeah.
There was no, like, not enough room to move behind a table stuff going on that you get a lot of events, you know?
Yeah.
The back of the Nobrow table was, at one point, was like party central. Everyone was just coming behind the table for a chat. It was quite nice, you know?
Yeah.
It was good. And there was that big alleyway behind you, wasn't there, Vince, that you could, you know?
Yeah, there's plenty of space behind the tables and stuff. So, it was good. My final shout-out, so I just want to say a big thank you to Nick, Sarah, Neil, Rachel, Nigel and Tony for being on the panels that I was in. So I just ask a question, just let the panelists do it. And it was good fun. So yeah.
And I'll give a shout to Aaron Rackley, who is my journey car mate there and back. It's nice to have a conversation, especially since I think I would probably fallen asleep and crashed on the M1 on the way back. My next door neighbours, Sarah Dunkerton and Matt Gibbs, who were just constant giggles. We were just laughing non-stop. Mr. Prolix, who I got his comic from, and I should be reading that soon. Gustavo Vargas, who dropped his comic off, which I reviewed recently, Manu, on the blog, but is incredible. I know you got a copy, V, didn't you? Charles Raymond, who was a good egg even when I hit him finally with a Nerf gun. Adam Faulp, I think in the one interview, I'm doing an interview with Kevin Kell, and he comes past going, "All right, Charles, you bastard," like that, and he just punches me on the arm, walks off. I think there's a bit of that going on. So that was the kind of mood of the event. Stuart Moraine and his good lady, Andy Hanks, Mr. Harrower and Tash and Dan Whitehead as well, some of the other people. And thanks to Sarah for helping me break down everything at the end, because you know what these conventions are like? You turn around and everyone's gone, don't you? Like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And And mine takes like an hour. I was meant to be trying to get over to page 45, and I just didn't get over in time to go and see him. But yeah, Sarah helped me with the banners, and Aaron helped, and yeah, we finally got it all done. But yeah, it's pretty good. I've got one more. If we're doing shouts now, V, one just to thank Pat Mills for the absolutely amazing review. I'm totally humbled by it. So I was a little bit emotional after I read it, and
I'm not surprised. Me
email as well. Yeah. So he's talk about a good guy and a good friend to have. He's the guy. Do you know? He's the man. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, totally brilliant. Yep. They're mine. No.
On to me.
Yes. On to you, Dan.
Boy, Danny B. We've got two competitions running on the pod right now. The first one is the Rock the God competition, which we asked last week.
Yes. We've got a winner.
Yes. What's the name of the crooked referee in Rock the Reds who makes a return in Rock the God? And pulled out of the various answers we got in from Richard Sheaf. And the answer was...
the Don. Yes.
Yeah. The referee, Nigel Ball, and he's from Leicester. And he continues the adventures with, is it Carl Dixon? They're both shrunk down, and they continue in Rock the God. So two to jump off on that. Rock the God Kickstarter's still cracking on. When you listen to this on the Monday, you've got 10 days to go. It needs a bit of a push. So if you want to get in on that, I would really suggest you check it out. It's a fantastic comic. And you can read Rock of the Reds on Comic House.
That's of still
on there. Yeah, it's all in there. So get a taste for it. And we're still running the awesome comic. I don't know if we can brand it as that. The postcard challenge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really need to do that now.
So we want to sketch up an original postcard. You're going to send it over to Richard. We'll put the link in the show notes. And essentially we're going to do like, I think it's going to be like a blind raffle, or everyone puts in a bit of money and the card to draw at random. So you're going to get a bit of original art, and all the money is going to go to the Little Heroes charity, which goes to making comic making kits for children in hospital. So
and that's just a standard sort of A6 postcard.
I believe so. Yeah, I don't think it's going to go too wrong if you go for an A5.
Yeah,
So good stuff.
Yeah.
So
great stuff.
All that cost you is basically a stamp to send it in if you're an artist. Cool. And I guess the details for the draw will come a bit later. And finally, the awesome comic strip competition.
The awesome.
We'll save that for Valentine's Day.
Oh God.
Oh, I'm writing that down. Although
we should do a romance competition around that time.
That'd be interesting.
Call it arse. Yeah.
No.
What? That can be loving.
So we've had a lot of interest in this one, so we're going to open the deadline a little bit more.
It's going to take ages to read them all.
Tuesday the 22nd at midnight. If you get your script in by then, we're recording again on the 23rd. So we'll be able to read for your scripts on the Wednesday and then pick out our two favourites.
You've got
a couple more days.
Yeah.
So if you were sort of like thinking, oh, I've got time to put one together, or you was half done it and didn't get it quite right, feel free to send it in. So we're looking for a 3-page script for a horror comic. I'm going to draw it for you. You can do whatever you want with it, print it, put it online, whatever. You can make it weird as wonderful as you wish. Please don't put us three in. I know it's a nice little novelty, but it'll really kind of...
Yeah. This is more just straight up original horror. It doesn't
straight
have,
up original horror. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It doesn't not have to be funny. It doesn't have to be. Yeah, yeah.
Do whatever you want. Yeah. Literally.
Yeah, and thank you to everyone that's applied so far. Because
I've had some crackers through. Yeah, I've enjoyed reading the couple I've read so far. I've enjoyed reading them.
Yeah,
definitely.
So you
I've got. Sorry, man. Go on.
Email that into theawesomecomicpod@gmail.com.
Comics pod. Don't forget the
comics pod. Yes,
awesome comics
pod. So one more time, email to the awesome comics pod@gmail.com.
There you go.
Sorry, Tony.
Sorry, mate. I forgot to mention Slings and Arrows, which is the Nottingham Comic Convention charity anthology number 4, which we're all in. All of the boys are in it. I've just read yours, V. I read your strip. Very good. I love the slightly different style to what you normally work in as well.
I'd like to say there was a reason for it. But you know me. There's no reason for anything.
You're an agent of chaos.
I am indeed. Maybe I should put that on my business cards. Agent of chaos.
That'd be nice. And Dan's got the back cover. The Reckless Boys have got the front cover. And me and Imber have got... me and Mr. Prolix have got the first story, which I'm really pleased with. So Brilliant. If you want that, go to find them on Twitter or go to their website and buy a copy, because the money goes from good charities. Undoubtedly, you've just heard about them. There you go.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Nice. So from that joyful comic to some other things you should check out, to the recommend section. As you can tell, folks, this is a bit of a shorter, sharper show this week. Our next episode is our Halloween episode, but we'll talk about that in a sec. Tony, what do you want to recommend?
So I go first. So yeah, go mine is Mike Krell, A Life is Drawing Without an Eraser, and it's from Tomorrow's Publishing. I'm big fans of, you know me, and it's written by Dewey Cassell with Jeff Messer. I got this book from the Tomorrow stand at New York, and I'm a really big fan of their stuff. I subscribe and have Back Issue Magazine on my pull list, and I'm always buying their artist stuff. And they just put a thing out called Kirby and Lee Stuff Said, Conversations Between the Two of Them. And to be honest with you, there's nothing that they do that I wouldn't want on my shelf. I've been doing quite a lot of investigations into the history of comics again. I'm a bit of a fan of that as a sort of study. I know we talked about Slugfest a couple of weeks ago, which is a great book as well. And it's nice to see a couple of listeners picked it up and are listening to it or reading it as well, which is good. And this one is about one of my favourite creators, Mike Grell. I've been a fan of Mike since I first saw him in Legion of Superheroes in the Bronze Age through to Star Slayer at Pacific Comics, which weirdly Nicole from the Lakes podcast was talking about recently, being a fan of it. Yeah, which is just like so sort of random. But then John Sable at First Comics I'm a huge fan of that. Warlord at DC Comics, which is well worth your time, and all the way through to the Image Revolution when he did Shaman's Tears.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which you remember. But probably my favourite thing that he's done is The Longbow Hunters. Yeah. DC, which isn't spoken about enough as being one of those moments in the 80s, along with Dark Knight, Watchmen, and a couple of other books, that was a real sort of key change and changed the character of Green Arrow, who was always kind of occasionally a little bit like Batman with bows and arrows and stuff, into somebody who deals with social issues and deals with more ground level stuff. And the Longbow Hunters and the Green Arrow series that followed on are really special to me. I think people should be reading them, because they cover some really interesting stuff that you just don't see really enough now.
I always feel like sometimes writers, like, the character has no real definition, and you get something like that, something like The Dark Knight, and then it defines the character from then on, and it's always kind of written like that. I always feel like sometimes writers aspire to do that with like a third rate character and like put their stamp on it, and that this is the way it's going to be done forevermore.
I think you see that key change, don't you? I think you saw it recently with Mr. Miracle.
Yes.
And television, I think the two that you've seen it with. You saw it with Warren Ellis when he did Moon Knight, I think. There's a few that happen every so often, and whether they stick or not, sometimes I just admire that insight into something you see from a different angle. But Longbow Hunters is a great book. And this is a homage, and it's a long interview, including interviews with others, with Grell, who I met at the London Super Comic Con a few years ago, and it was an absolute gent. In fact, I've got a frame print on my wall in front of it. So the guys at Tomorrow's really do their work. They really care about it, and they do it without an agenda, and they do it for a love of the medium, and they include, and this is just full of just sketches and production work and commissions and color pieces, and it's just a beautiful book to look at. If you're ever into a particular artist and you've got a yearning for a particular artist, anything from Tomorrow's that specifies, you know, they did that the sort of Masterwork series, didn't they, on various Winningo and, you know, John Romita Jr. and John Byrne and all those sort of people, and they really are lovely, and they're great things to pick up. But this has got some interviews in it as well, sort of long form interviews with Paul Levitz, who's quite funny actually about his sort of interactions with Mike Grell. Dan Jurgens gives a really good interview in it, and because he worked on Green Arrow. Denny O'Neill is great, and the descriptions of people are from these old school guys are quite honest. And he says, "Well, I used to know Mike, and he used to see him quite a lot. He just seemed like this sort of really funny, jocular guy that I used to sort of hang out with." And I think, you know, there's none of this sort of pre-programmed bullshit about what an amazing artist he is or something like that. It's just that from these old guys, it's sort of slightly more honest, and it takes you from his childhood obsession. Mike Grell's childhood obsession with the Edgar Rice Burroughs characters, and he draws a great Tarzan. I tell you, he draws some good stuff. He did like a Tarzan newspaper strip and a few other things around that sort of thing, you know, John Carter and Carson of Venus and that sort of thing. And it's got a load of pencil work, and if ever you see Grell's pencil work, you realise occasionally what we're missing in the industry now is people with a real grasp of physicality and a real knowledge of how things work and how bodies work and how people move. And, you know, his characters look like muscular gymnasts. He knows how they fly through the air. He knows how they throw a punch. And he's big. I think he's a big archer as well, Mike Grell. He's into archery, which kind of explains a lot of the longbow hunter stuff. You know, that you really pinned it down. There was none of this sort of stupid firing of a boxing glove arrow thing that happened.
it's weird that Warlords is that's like it's a big comic. I don't think I've ever read any of it.
It's good. And I mean, a lot of sort of people would say, oh, it's kind of a reply to Conan, and kind of it is in a kind of way, but it's more of a sort of it's like a Doug McClure movie crossed with you know what I mean.
It's like a future pilot or something, isn't he? Lands in like a kind of barbarian world, right? And
yes, it's
goes from there.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. And he does. They play on it a bit. And I think in the Justice League universe cartoon where he meets Green Arrow, and they're kind of like, one's just a blonde version of the other one, you know, sort of thing. But really good stuff. And he's quite a character, Grell. He's got a lot of history about him. He's 70 now. He's semi-retired. He does a lot of commissions and does a lot of conventions and stuff. But this is a guy who's reading comics in Saigon during the war. You know, he volunteered and was in the US Air Force out there. And rather than going on about how terribly he had it in Vietnam, you know, like you hear, he just goes on about, oh, I was sitting there and someone brought a Fantastic Four comic in, and I was reading it and we were talking about it. And there's these lovely, lovely anecdotes from him. I talk occasionally about Two Morals because I really do admire their stuff, and they do love the medium. And I think we need to. I've been talking to a few creators recently and been surprised at the lack of knowledge about stuff from before. And not in a bad way, just in a, you know, stuff that I think they might be interested in because their style might be influenced, or they might not be helped, but they might see a new angle at stuff sometimes. Mm. And Grell appears. Grell was a superstar. We forget Shaman's Tears was a big seller.
It was,
you know, even as a young artist, he was featured. They did a feature on him in the Amazing World of DC Comics, which was the DC equivalent to Foom magazine. Go and have a look at their stuff. Like I say, Back Issue magazine is always worth a look, and it's always sort of themed, so they might have a cosmic issue or a martial arts issue, or, you know, a Superman in the 80s issue or something like that. If you go to tomorrows.com, you can see all their stuff. Most comic shops should have something. You occasionally have to order it specially, and you might not see it on the shelf of every comic shop, but they've done stuff. They did a really good book on called Swamp Men, which is about Swamp Thing, and Man-Thing and all their sort of creatures. They did a really good book that I got at Christmas, actually, called The Comic Book Implosion, about DC's problems during the 70s. Yeah, all good stuff. Yeah, there you go. That's my one.
Brilliant. Nice. I've got a short and sharp one, which is much like the comic itself. Picked up, finally, I'd already read it, but I wanted a physical copy of it. And this is Hello to Jason Isaacs, which a mini comic by Stuart Mulrain. From the Nerds Who Haunted Themselves podcast, and this is from the Nerds Who Published Themselves. I see what he's done there. This is it's a great little book. You know, as soon as I read it, I knew I wanted to have a copy of it, and it all came about from as Stuart says in the back of the book, it was the result of giving himself the challenge of drawing a mini comic in 12 hours.
Oh right, bloody hell.
Yeah, and ignoring his family for most of a Sunday.
As every Sunday.
Yeah. I mean... now, he does say it's not polished or refined, but it's a comic kind of in the early days of small press comics, and it's one more comic than I ever thought I'd make. Well, I think you should make more, Stuart, to be honest.
Yeah, I was really impressed with this. I did a little review of it, and he sent me the sort of the black and white Ashcan version of it, and I got a copy of him out of it yesterday.
Yeah.
And... I think it's a lovely little personal, quirky story, I think.
Well,
you know?
I mean, as you say, Tony, it's short, quirky, funny, warm, and raw.
Oh, is that what I said?
That's what you got on the back of the book.
Oh, have I? I haven't seen that. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
And the back of the book has one of the best pull quotes ever. I can't believe you wasted a Sunday on this. Stuart's wife.
Yes.
Which is cracking. Yeah,
His lovely lady wife does make me chuckle. When I walked past, I said, she goes, where are you going? I said, I'm going for a wee. And she said, thank you for sharing that, Tony, and just looked back at her book.
Yeah. The book itself, though, it's a short little tale about someone basically hearing on the podcast, and I believe it's the Simon Mayo, Mark Kermode film cast, because they occasionally mention Jason Isaacs. They talk about Jason Isaacs, the great actor. I'm a big fan of Jason Isaacs as well. And how they always say hello to Jason Isaacs. And then it's not... It's sort of semi-autobiographical, because it's sort of Stuart, yet it's not Stuart, I believe. I mean, I'm guessing he's had these thoughts. But it's about a character thinking, what if I did get the chance to say hello to Jason Isaacs? Because if people say hello to him in real life, he's totally fine with it. He's not a grumpy, you know, one of those grumpy actors. He knows the reference that's come from the podcast. He goes, oh, hello, hello back. So this person starts like obsessing that. Over... Oh, what? How would I do it? You know, where would it happen? What? How could I make it happen? And it is funny. It's quite poignant, and I think there's moments in there. I mean, Stuart's got a great sense of humour, anyway.
Yeah,
definitely. And like, there's one panel that goes, "What if it's even not him?" And he says, "Hello to Jason Isaacs. I'm Chris Isaac, dumbass." And then, and the art's really great as well. I think. He should honestly do more little stuff like this, and I think it would be tailor-made for a slightly bigger compilation. There's a great humour going through it.
This book's great. Robot book as well. Did you get that?
The robot book. Yeah, I know. Yeah. He's also got March of the Robot, which is when he did March art challenge, wasn't it? March of the Robots. You know that one?
Yeah.
He's compiled that into March of the Robot. Long Walk Home. That's also available. And also he's one of the guys responsible for Tales from Beyond Infinity, which is a cracking couple of books. You can buy them online at oktruebelievers.com or read them digitally. You can actually read all of this stuff at comichouse.com. And if you want to see more of Stuart's work, it's great to see him do a bit more artwork as well. I think even like. Some people are like really down on their own. If they don't draw, you know, if they don't consider themselves to be a natural artist, whenever they draw, they're like, "Oh, I'm not really an artist," but you are. I read this, and it's like, this is a style. You've got a style.
This is better than a lot of comics out there, my friend.
Yeah.
So I don't know why there's no need for him to be down on himself, because I really enjoyed this. It was a nice, especially Jason Isaacs. It was a nice little in the middle of my day. I thought, I wasn't expecting that, and I didn't know about it being a thing already. Saying hello to Jason Isaacs, it just occurred to me, what a strange book, but kind of that completely works, you know.
Yeah. It's taking that seed of a concept and then just. Sort of embellishing it, which is great. If you follow Stuart at Token Nerd on Twitter and Instagram at Stuart, and there's underscores in this, so where I'm going to put spaces, there's underscores at Stuart thinks he can draw. Yeah, and also his Facebook is facebook.com Stuart can't draw, so you can see that. But you can, dude. You can.
Don't be down on yourself.
Yeah, yeah, it's got a great cover as well. It's one of my favourite covers, I think, at the moment. It's like
it's almost like a Hitchcockian inspired.
Yeah, cover. It's like a Vertigo sort of book. Yeah.
Who's the guy did those posters? I forget his name.
Oh God.
It was really popular, and people were going on about him on Twitter a couple of years ago, nonstop. Yeah. Is it Sol Bass? Is
that his name? That's it. Sol Bass. Yeah. I know he's named after a fish.
And Kevin Mackerel.
Kevin Mackerel and Sol Bass.
I didn't get to read any bloody comics this week, but I did get taken out to a completely nerdy place. I got to play that X-Wing game, which was
I saw that.
Fun.
Yeah.
Did you win? No, sadly not.
We only have winners on this show, Dan.
Well, I was a winner in that place.
Yeah, I could tell from the photograph, my friend.
No offense to the other patrons.
Yeah. I'm glad you can't smell things through photographs. That's all I'm going
to
say.
No, to be fair, like, it was such a big building that smell wasn't an issue, fortunately. Maybe it's different in summer, but...
Yeah.
Fucking hell, like the dietary choices down crisps, pizza, full sugar coke. I'm not knocking any of these things, but
I was about to say, what's your problem? That's three of my five a day.
A man who texted me saying, I've stopped at the services for Kentucky yesterday.
Is that a ritual for you? Because last time we was at Leamington, you said, I'm going to stop.
I know, it's just the fact that there is a KFC 15 minutes away from my house as I come back from off the motorway. And when you've had I don't know about you guys, I don't really eat much when I'm...
I don't eat at all. They brought me a sandwich and I barely touched it, yeah.
Yeah, and I was just going on caffeine and sugar and I just...
Yeah.
And by about 8:15, I thought, I just need to consume something. So, yeah.
Yeah. And doing those panels as well, it's tiring, man. It's like constant concentration, isn't it? You don't...
Yeah, you got to be fucking on the ball completely.
Yeah.
I will say that... when you're on your own on a table, and I like sitting down and drawing as well, especially those times where there's the quiet moments of a convention or on some of them. It's nice to have something to do, just to sort of sit down and have a bit of a sketch. But for me personally, when you're on your own, I feel like that you've got to be sort of switched on in several different modes. You know, because sometimes I was drawing and people would probably drift up to the table and then drift away. Especially. I will say, there was a lot of very nice people who came over to say nice things about my artwork, like lots of kids and stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, one little girl who was cosplayed or something, I can't remember what it was, she just came over just to say, you're a very good artist. And that made my day. And a big shout out to the lad, I didn't get his name, and I can't remember his name as well. He was dressed, you might remember what he looked like, Tony, because he was cosplaying as John Constantine.
Oh, I saw him, yeah.
He was the most excited person because he just ran over the table going, yes, issue 4's ready. And he came and finished up his run of awesome comics. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I met him before, actually.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
How old is he?
I want to say.
To read it.
Yep. I'm not...
Because you said a young lad.
Because last year he really wanted it, and then you spoke to his mum, didn't you?
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah. And he obviously just really enjoyed it, so there you go.
That's fine. Yeah. We're still watching 18 action films of that age. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
There's nothing in there you wouldn't see in the 80s
nothing,
action film.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, there's nothing. It's the language. That's the thing that makes it properly.
Yeah, because kids don't hear bad language, do they?
No.
No.
Let's leave that there. Yes. So that made my day as well. So, you know, I think sometimes, and we did all right yesterday, but sometimes when you have a quiet convention, you can have one or two interactions with just someone that you don't know.
Yeah.
That is just complimentary about your work or just and it'll just make your day. I think that can really.
Great, yeah.
Yeah. So to have that on top of it being a great day anyway, just.
Somebody came over to the No-Brow table, which was two tables worth of different books, and said, did you draw and write all of this?
You said yes, didn't you?
So I said, yes, I did.
Yes.
Of course I did.
Yeah. As Tony said in his interview that you heard earlier. Yes. Thank you very much for listening this week, folks. The next episode is our Halloween special. So, the intro music will be a little bit different. And, we'll be talking a bit more about horror comics, a different side of horror comics. With some new creators, we're not going to announce them yet, but, who have just sort of arrived on the scene. And it's going to be a hilarious show, I already know. It's going to be hilarious. So we would have spoken to them probably in an interview, but we knew that we had them lined up. So, we wanted to save the gold for then. So, next week is our Halloween special. And then, shortly after that, will be at Thought Bubble in just a couple of weeks. Yeah.
And then we got BAM after that, haven't we?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Oh, yes, I'll do a full announcement of that.
And I'll
be at Christmas, isn't it?
Next show, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll be at MCM Friday to Sunday next weekend.
This weekend, this very weekend, you're going to be at MCM.
Yeah, so pop over to No-Brow Store. We'll have a few freebies as usual and stuff, so come and say hi.
Yeah. It's well worth it. And because Tony, just to see Tony.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, Dan, his beard's looking marvellous.
Oh, brilliant.
It's got a bit of out of control, to be fair.
Yeah.
You let it grow out.
Yeah. Yeah. So someone went, what's happened to you? You look like a biker. No, thanks. Yes. You know, people are sort of slightly overfamiliar. We don't really know them, but listen to the podcast. I don't mind it normally. But yeah, so what's happened?
That's
to
a
you?
Hell of a way to get into it. What's happened to you?
Yeah. Oh, hello, mate. How are you? How's your mum? Yeah. You know, it's like that. Yeah.
What the fuck's happened to you?
Oh dear.
Sorry, mum. Yeah, you're right.
But we'll find out not on the next show, but the show after. Because, like I say, the next show is the Halloween special.
Yes. Yeah.
On the episode after that, you'll get another Tony Esmond MCM report. Which I know a lot of people who listen to Tony Esmond's MCM reports and love it.
They're quite famous. They're... I think Eamon from the Mega City podcast sent me a private message saying if you're at MCM, don't get put off by men with beards eating prawn sandwiches again.
So don't pay for enough. Christ.
Yes. And on that bombshell, thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And like I say, enter the competition.
Yes.
If you're a script writer out there, you got 2 days left to go. It's only a 3-page script, so get going and send your entries into awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Because Dan said he'll draw it, and his work is priceless.
Yes.
Seriously. Thank you.
Can't buy that. You can.
Wait, you can buy it.
Yeah, you can buy that. But you won't
contact
have
me.
To.
Contact me for details.
Second week running, we've done that gag, and it went all right, I think. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And, you can also follow us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod. And follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you want to just join a Facebook group, which is growing all the time.
Yeah, we've got about 10 new members this week.
Yeah, then join Awesome Comics Talk to continue the conversation of every weekly episode, as well as all the brilliant new conversations that's going on. They're always well thought out. It's debate. There's none of this nonsense, over the top hard selling or people just being shitty to each other. There's a good group of people there. So, yeah, if you want to get involved talking about comics, or if you need advice as well, if you're doing a web comic or a print comic, and maybe you've got some questions, pop it on the
Facebook.
That's
the place to ask.
Yeah, that is definitely the place to ask, because you know everyone's got their own experience and we'll give you some handy hints and tips. So, yes, and thank you for listening, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. And thank you. Hello to all the new listeners, by the way.
Yes,
welcome.
Yeah, yes. The numbers have been going up a bit, which is nice to see.
Yeah, they've been steadily going up, actually.
Yeah, so hopefully you stick with us. As we get bigger, the quality will go downhill. No. Of course it won't. That's normally what happens, isn't it?
The more people who are listening, the more hilarious and funny we think when we're being really rude.
Yeah. Well, that goes for you, Tony.
Nerf gate.
Oh, it will be known as Nerfgate. absolute carnage.
Matt Gibbs just looked at me and went, "This is going to escalate."
I think this is the first shot in a war.
Yeah,
we should get Matt on. I had a chuckle with him.
Matt's great, actually, and we haven't spoken to him yet, have we? So
we did like a little on the spot interview, but we've not had him on for a full interview.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's got some great experiences of writing as well, so we'll probably get a writing episode. Thank you for listening on iTunes. Leave us a review or subscribe. Help get the word out about the show and all the new comics and conventions and independent stuff happening out there. We truly appreciate it. And whether you listen to us on any network, whether it be on Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Well, now that the cold nights are coming in and we're expecting some snow, I think it's worth listening to us on Pod Council Gritter.
What?
That's Council Gritter.
Just when I think I know what you're going to do. Jesus. Anyway. Where can people find us online, etc.?
Neuroinanything.blogspot.com or S-O-S-E-Z-O-H-Y-Z on Twitter.
Yes, and you can buy his comic. If you don't want to come to a convention table and ask for the special stuff...
We had a couple of people asking for the special stuff.
You sold out of it.
Oh, did they all go, did they?
Yeah, they all went.
Oh, nice. There you go.
Yeah.
I didn't bring that many.
Look, no, you don't say that, Tony. You just say it's a sellout.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry, sold out.
I only brought one copy. Winning. I sold out!
Sold out.
Neverironanything.bigcartel.com.
Nice.
There you go. I added some physical copies of Sin which are very cheap, and you can add to your order as well on there. From me and Mr. Harrower.
Yes, who would not speak to me. He would not give me an interview.
Oh, wouldn't he? Why?
He refused.
He was fucking...
And in his words, I haven't got anything new. I'll have something new at Thought Bubble. You can talk to me then. I said, well, maybe I won't want to talk to you then. And I stormed off.
He's good.
Yeah. Dan, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice, which is back up and running and kicking ass. Indeed you do. Awesome to see. And if you want to follow me on social media, etc., then follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo. I don't have a shop yet. I might set up a shop, but I have just announced that.
Easy to do, mate. I tell you.
Yeah, there may be a sketchbook coming.
Ah, yes. Awesome, maybe.
Had a peek at that.
I've already had a little, already pre-ordered mine.
Yes, I'll probably give a bit more information because when we finish recording this, I'm probably about to click order on it.
Oh, good man.
Yeah. But I don't want to say too much just in case it doesn't arrive and I can't deliver what's promised.
Have you got the dedication of much love, Tony and Dan?
Oh, that's in there. That's got a whole splash page.
Oh, I bet it is.
Yeah, literally. It's laminated.
Your obsession with splash pages after sending me that poster of muffins having sex with each other.
That's a different kind of splash page, Tony. Seriously, though, you should pick that up because that is hilarious. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, folks. Stay tuned to us for the forthcoming weeks. It's going to be we're neck deep in convention season, but we're coming to the end of it, and it's going to be an interesting few weeks and a fun few weeks for us. So stay tuned. And from Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. And what should they do?
Stay awesome.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.